is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown!
From One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio in with you today. And, oh, by the way, the rest of this week, Murph, with another well-deserved week off before things really ramp up and get going once training camp begins at St. John Fisher College on July 27th. Report date on the 26th, practice on the 27th. And from there, my partner, Donald Jones, as you know, as a player, now as a broadcaster, you've been doing this long enough. This is what I like to say, Donald, to people. And they say, how's your summer going? And I say, well, it's great. And then on July 27th, it either ends or it begins. My life ends or begins, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
My life ends or begins on July 27th. I like to think it begins because once that starts, it's football season. I'm happy.
You know, when I was a player, I always had to report, and there were so many things that happened during the month of August. Like my son, number one, he was born in August, and so every year, birthday party, I was never able to be at his birthday parties. Guys having different events, birthday parties, cookouts, whatever it was, I missed all of them because I always had to report back to camp. So I always was like, man, I don't really have a summer. You know, I get a couple of weeks off, and then I'm right back at it, you know, and I guess it's still the same way.
Yeah, kind of. You know, and I've always heard Steve Tasker say for players back in the day, you used to use camp to get ready for the season. Now you use the offseason to get ready for camp.
I'm telling you.
Right? Because you have to be in shape when you get there. I'm no different, actually. In fact, just this week I told my wife, I'm like, well, camp is hot. I'm going to be out there a lot. I got to kind of scale back a little bit, maybe shed a couple of pounds if I can, because we got to run around and report, Doing
Donald.
You know?
I mean,
we're not doing Oklahoma's.
No,
you know, but
not.
We got to. Yeah, well, I always work out, but I got to do a little bit more intensity, I think.
So how about, because you're going to be down at camp.
I'll be down
for
there. Yep.
A good amount of days. I'll be down there. All of us will be. We should wake up in the mornings and go work out.
We should. I can do that.
The
gym that I go to here in Buffalo, there's one also in Rochester, and I just go there. After I set up camp, I'm like, hey, I'm in town for a couple of weeks covering the Bills, and they let me use that one. So it's pretty cool, right?
Hey,
obviously,
let's do it, yeah.
You could do that. So we'll have to get on that. As far as today, a lot of working out on the show because we got some great, great people coming your way. Andrew Brandt is going to join us at 1 p.m., and then Terrence McGee at 2. And, of course, Andrew is great as far as knowing all the business side of sports.
Yeah.
You've heard him on different networks. He formerly of ESPN, but he used to be in the Packers front office. And really, we wanted to reach out to Andrew today to really talk about this dynamic between the NFL and the NBA and all these players in the NFL getting upset at the money that the NBA guys are making. And, you know, Sammy Watkins, amongst others, by the way, many of them, tweeting about how NFL players are underpaid compared to the NBA. And, well, we'll find out. Why is that? Will it ever change? And we'll get with Andrew Brandt at 1 p.m. And then Terrence McGee. Did you play with Terrence? He was gone by then.
No, I played with Terrence.
You did?
Yeah, I played with Terrence.
Terrence was here for a lot longer.
He was. Now, you know, when Terrence was here, he wasn't playing kickoff return anymore. He was just,
That's right.
Playing corner. Terrence was the quietest dude, like, ever. You know, it was hard to really get things out of him. You go over there and you talk to him, and it's like, does this dude talk at all? You know, so this interview should be interesting. We'll see.
And he, of course, has one of the most famous plays in, I would say, drought history for the Bills, if not really Bills history. I mean, it is a play that's talked about a lot, and that is a famous, great kickoff return, but he never got in the end zone.
Yeah, that's like my father says, just the best that never did it.
That's it, the best that never did it.
Just the best
this
that
is
never
the one.
Did
Someone
it.
Tripped him up at the end. He was gassed against New Orleans. I'm sure a lot of fans remember that. We'll ask him about that. I hope that he doesn't get upset, but I'll ask him about that particular kickoff return and then not getting into the end zone. So we got that. We got a whole bunch of guests coming your way throughout the week. We're glad you're joining us here. You can jump on the phone lines at any time, 803-0550, 888-550-2550. Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones. I'll be filling in for Murph all week long here. We're going to talk Bills today, obviously. We have a poll question we want to pose to you. And something I was sitting around thinking about as camp does approach, Donald, is what the Bills have actually done this offseason so far. And as I'm thinking about it, I'm reading NFL.com. And NFL.com basically has the top five offseason moves for every team.
Right.
And they ran through the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this includes everything, including coach and GM change and things like that. I think that would be if I asked you the most important thing they did this year, I would think you would, as I would say, well, the coach and the GM.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I said, let's limit it to just players and just personnel moves, so to speak, even though one of these is really more of a possible future personnel move. The question we asked today, and I want to know from the fans out there, is what was the most noteworthy slash impactful move the Bills made this offseason, personnel move?
Aside from the coaches.
That's right. Just personnel, so players. And the choices we're going to give you, and you can go to John Murphy Show on Twitter and see this. We'll put it up on the screen right now. Tyrod Taylor's new deal, coming back, bringing Tyrod back, signing Micah Hyde, the drafting of both Tre'Davious White and Zay Jones, and we included them together because we only get four choices, so we cheated, or the trading for the 2018 first-round pick. And right off the cuff, we've already had many votes on this. Half the respondents, including, and even though there's four choices, are already going with that trade for the next year's draft pick. And I think that's where this is going to wind up, and I figured it would. But can we today, you and I, make the case at least for each one to play devil's advocate? Can we go through each one and say, I want to make the case that Tyrod's new deal is the most impactful. I want to make the case Micah Hyde's signing is the most impactful.
Okay.
And we can see, maybe we can sway some of the voters and listeners to go that way. We can do that, right?
I mean, to be honest with you, I would probably go with Tyrod's new deal.
Well, there you go. You can make that case.
And the reason I would go with that is just because I think once they got him locked in, it brought back guys like Kyle Williams.
That's right.
And a guy like Lorenzo Alexander. And it also helped to bring in free agents like a Micah Hyde, you know, those types of guys. Because if there was no quarterback here, you didn't know who your starting quarterback was going to be, you wouldn't have been, I don't know if you could bring in a guy like Micah Hyde, because he's like, I'm going to leave Green Bay and go to Buffalo, where I don't even know who the quarterback is going to be. Like, will we even win like
Lorenzo
that?
Mentioned this.
Yeah.
Lorenzo said, you know, at this point in his career, he needs to know he's going to a team that has somebody they believe in at quarterback. He said this was one of the reasons he chose to come back to Buffalo when he did have other opportunities out there that he was investigating. I agree with you 100%. That's a really good way to put it, because if you don't bring Tyrod back, things are much different maybe throughout the entire offseason.
Yeah.
But now that you brought him back, it allowed you to do other things. And I'll even say, it allowed you to make that trade you made, because you could move down. You didn't have to maybe reach for a quarterback in the first round.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of different ways. Let's go through. What did Tyrod do? He signed a new five-year, $90 million contract. That was last year, going into last year. I'm sorry. That was the one that they tore up and they brought him back on. This year, instead of counting what he was going to count, about $18 million on the cap, they reduced that to almost $9 to $10 million. I mean, half, basically, which freed up all that money. So I think that's a really good point. So we'll go through all of them. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. It's been a while since you and I have been together. How has your summer been?
My summer has been good thus far. I mean, we had off for the last week, 4th of July week, and I enjoyed my 4th of July week. Did a lot. You know, I did some traveling. And
good. Where'd you go?
And, oof, man.
Everywhere?
Yeah, basically.
Drive, fly?
I flew and drove.
Okay.
I did a little bit of both, you know, and then I was in a wedding.
Okay. This past weekend. Where was that?
The wedding was in New Jersey.
All right.
One of my best friends growing up, he got married finally. And the wedding, it was in New Jersey. I was the best man in the wedding, so I had to prepare a speech and everything. And, you know, I killed the speech, but the wedding was fun. Now, you know, we had the whole party the night before, and that was rough. So the day of the wedding.
So you had a bachelor party the night before?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Bachelor party is usually a little before the wedding.
Right.
But you had
to
wait.
Well, trust me. I
bet you had to wait for all your guys to get in at one time, and this was the only time you could do it.
That was the only time we could do it. And so, you know, it was rough, you know. So the day of the wedding was like, oh, man, I'm hurting. I woke up with a headache, and I was hurting the entire day. And it was like 90 degrees, 92, I think. And we're out there with these black suits on, just baking in the sun, taking pictures. And I'm like, come on, man, I just want to get this day over with, you know. So it was fun, though. We had, I had a good time.
That's very cool. In fact, to prove that Donald was at this wedding and that he had a very good time, we have a picture. Look at that guy. Now, of course, you can't see it on radio. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But we are on MSG today. The first thing I said to you was this a gangster-themed wedding? You look like,
you know,
you look like a gangster who went to a casino in the 1930s, ready to win a couple million bucks and then shoot the place up.
You know, I was just watching this movie with Ben Affleck and Zoe Saldana. I forgot. He was a gangster, though, way back in the day. And he sold alcohol. He sold booze.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the movie is called, but that's what, when you said that, it reminds
me
of that.
What
but
you
actually,
look like.
we had the suits and everything, And then, you know, obviously my father and I own a hat store back in New Jersey. And so we got dressed at my father's house, which is where I am in that picture. And nice. You can see all my little trophies behind him from
me
growing
up.
Yeah. Right? We got dressed over there, and he has a lot of hats at the house, like a showcase at the house. And so when we got dressed, my buddy, he was like, hey, man, we should put hats on. It had changed the entire wedding.
Dude, it looked
changed
great.
The entire thing.
That
and
looks
so
great.
Everybody had a hat on. All seven of us in the wedding party had hats on.
Good wedding?
Oh,
fun.
Yeah.
Outside, inside?
Inside.
Inside wedding. Very yeah. nice. Can we throw that picture back up? I have one question for you. All right? This is the question I have. Is there a barber's chair in your dad's house?
That chair standing next to me?
Yeah.
No,
that looks like a barber's chair. Like, look at, like, they got the overhang. Like, you're going to put that around your neck?
No, it's not a barber's chair.
Okay.
It's just a regular
chair. It's just a chair.
Chair.
It looks like, look like you're doing some hair down there.
No, it's just a regular chair.
Now, what about the pool table?
The pool table is literally right next to
okay,
that
because
chair.
I can tell if you're going to have a clock that has pool balls as the numbers, you need a pool table.
We have a pool
you can't just have one without the other.
Everybody, my uncle, grandfather, my father, everybody has pool tables. That's like what we did. I have some pool sharks. That
wow!
Do it for
can you play?
Oh, I can definitely
wow.
play. Yeah,
we are. At camp, we're gonna do all this
when
stuff
I was
at camp
in,
that
when
I did not
in
know
training
about.
Camp, we would. They always had a pool table in the dorm okay. for the team, and we would play. You know, and I would beat up on a lot of different people on the team. It was,
ladies and gentlemen, the first ever John Murphy Show pool tournament, starring Donald Jones. That has a nice ring.
Do you
it.
Play pool?
I do. I mean, I'm not a shark or anything, but I think I'm pretty good. You know, I'm coordinated. I can hit the ball, and I think, you know, good angles. I've played enough in my life.
Yeah, once you understand angles, it's
right.
It's
I've played enough in my life, but we should do that during camp. See,
Let's
these are things
it.
We have to figure out, Donald. We're going to be gone away from our wives and kids and, you know, for plenty of nights.
Right.
And, you know, coming up here, we got to figure out things to do.
All right, let's do it.
All right, we're going to play some pool for sure. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. I took the time to go down to New York City to take my son, Max, to a Yankees game this a few weeks ago and just talking about what we've done over the summer. And I bring this up to you because you're also a Yankees fan, right, from New Jersey. So we went down there. Have you been to the new Yankee Stadium yet?
Yeah, I went. I haven't been to a game now in about 2 years, but I went about 2 years ago and I had the whole VIP access, and they had this restaurant underneath the stadium.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord. It was the food
amazing.
Down there. Is
I did not
amazing.
Know. We didn't do that. I need to do that.
They have this
Can you
restaurant
hook me up with
underneath
that?
The stadium. You know, I can hook you up with
See,
that.
See, you need to give me a name. You need to give me a name. This is what life's about. This is the perks of the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, it's always who you know.
That's right. No doubt about it. But here's the thing. So if we can show a picture here, I took Max, and this is where we were. Can you tell where we were here? We were in right field. Right
oh, yeah.
next. Aaron Judge is down there, right?
Yeah.
There's Max. There's Sal.
So did Aaron Judge hit a home run to you
He
guys?
Did not, but here's what did happen. So we buy standing room only tickets so that we could run around the stadium. I don't want to sit because I got a three-year-old. He's going to want to run around.
Right.
Well, you wouldn't, you know, I buy standing room only tickets, which you got to basically sit in right field. And on a Friday night, Donald, in right field, standing room only, that's when you get the young people who are just getting off work who want to go unwind, have a few drinks, and swear a lot and be pretty rowdy. That's where we were sitting the entire night.
So every time someone swears, you're like,
right. It was all right, though. I don't blame anybody. I get it. But after a while, we kind of had to start moving around a little bit because we were around a rowdy crowd.
Someone tweeted me. Live by Night is the movie.
Live by Night.
Live
okay.
by Night.
With I didn't see that with Ben Affleck.
Yeah, it's a pretty good movie.
There you go.
Yeah,
all right, nice.
Pretty good movie.
All right, and then, you know, it was just announced a little while ago. We're just running through what we did. Donald and I are catching up here. Excuse our self-conversation. Then it was announced that U2 was coming to Buffalo. I'm a big U2 fan. I'm going to go see them.
Right.
However, before it was announced they were coming to Buffalo, I wanted to go see them on this tour. We bought tickets for Cleveland. I went 2 weekends ago. We went right before July 4th, last weekend. We went July 1st. My wife and I, we were there. And I was there right there with Adam Bonini, our friend from Channel 2 here
Check
in Buffalo. He's a huge, huge fan, which is why he wore his Guinness shirt, by the way, for the Irish band, the Irish rock band. There's the stage. That's how close we were to see Bono
right
and
there.
The Edge. I've now seen U2 four times. I've seen them in Buffalo, Tampa, Boston, and Cleveland.
And you're going to see them in Buffalo
And
again?
I'll see them in Buffalo when they come. It was a fantastic show. There is nothing like at a concert, 70,000 people singing the refrain of With or Without You. It's pretty cool. When they all just sing, we all just sing together.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
I mean, you
fun.
Really have to be a true fan to go see the same band.
Because they don't, yeah,
four
you know what?
Five
this is the 30th year Joshua Tree anniversary tour. The last time they were on the Joshua Tree tour, I was 14. Now I'm 44. They played the entire album from the Joshua. It was pretty cool from the Joshua Tree. So I like it. What's the last concert you went to?
The last concert. I haven't really done. I went to a Ledisi concert, a soul singer, Ledisi. But I do a lot more like comedy shows.
Oh,
that's
nice.
My thing. I love comedy.
Do you really?
Stand-up comedy. I love it. Yeah. So
that's good.
You know, and I was telling you about the Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle show at Radio City, which is August 5th and 6th. Then they have all of these different artists performing. And I want to go, but I just can't make any plans right now.
All right, I know, because you got the show, then you got training camp. And then, like I said, life either ends or begins for us
exactly.
because we got training camp, right?
Exactly.
All right, here we go. What is the most impactful and noteworthy move the Bills made this offseason? We have four choices for you. If you want to enter another choice, that's fine. We could even go with the re-signing Lorenzo Alexander if you want. There are other things they did. They signed a kicker. I know it seems like, oh, it's a kicker, but after all the games last year that they struggled with, with extra points and things like that, Steven Hauschka could be somebody you could vote for. So maybe there's an other on there.
I would guarantee you we'll get a Steven Hauschka call.
We probably should. Tyrod's new deal, signing Micah Hyde, drafting of Trey and Zay, I like saying it like that, and the 2018 draft pick picking. We had a call, but it dropped, so we'll continue with this. Donald, you like the Tyrod signing as your vote. So let's talk a little bit about Tyrod Taylor coming back, what it means for the Buffalo Bills in 2017. You have a new offensive coordinator, a new head coach, but the same quarterback. How do you think that Tyrod Taylor is going to fit into this scheme with Rick Dennison and what it means going forward to bring him back?
I think Tyrod Taylor, this scheme really fits what he does. He likes to throw the ball deep. So hopefully Sammy Watkins is healthy and on the field. That is the guy that he wants to get the ball deep to. Obviously, everyone knows I would like to see Charles Clay involved in offense a lot more. But we need to figure out who's going to be the number two wide receiver, aside from Sammy Watkins. So once we figure that out, I think Tyrod Taylor will really fit in this scheme. I think it helps out with the running game, the play action. That really goes with what he likes to do. He likes to be able to roll out and do different things outside the pocket. So when you have a strong running game in this zone type of scheme, which Shady is going to enjoy. I mean, he wants to be able to read every hole.
No doubt.
He's really going to enjoy that.
I couldn't believe people who said when they hired Rick Dennison, oh, they got Shady McCoy. He's not a fit for this scheme. Are you freaking kidding me?
This is his scheme.
This is perfect for him.
Exactly.
Oh my God. This is a guy that is going to have to be the vision that he has to pick his holes and back and forth. But you're right. And that, by the way, will maybe open up Tyrod's
running. It will help things out for him because he's coming off the play action and, you know, he's able to roll out and do different things. The flood game, all types of deep down the field. I mean, I think this scheme is perfect for what he does. So if you have all of his weapons on the field and everyone to get the ball to, you'll get a true assessment of Tyrod Taylor and what he is. I think we kind of know what he is, but we'll get a real assessment if everyone is healthy and on the field.
You know, I was thinking about really how they've approached the quarterback position overall this offseason, Donald. It's not just Tyrod and bringing him back. They basically acquired three quarterbacks this offseason.
Yep.
They reacquired Tyrod on a new deal. I'm firmly convinced that the Bills would not have brought Tyrod Taylor back if he did not want to restructure his deal. I think on the current deal, I'm convinced that they would have let him go. So they basically acquired three quarterbacks. They went out and they signed T.J. Yates as a veteran free agent. I call him a veteran. He's been in the league, 4 years maybe, something like that. But playoff experience, he has a playoff win.
Right.
And then they drafted Nathan Peterman as a rookie in the fifth round. The one guy that's here that's not really attached to anything they did is Cardale Jones. I think this is going to be an uphill battle for Cardale Jones to make this roster. He could do it. Maybe he shines really well in camp. I think the guy he'd have to beat out is T.J. Yates. I can't see Nathan Peterman being off this roster.
Yeah, he definitely would have to beat out T.J. Yates once we get to training camp. Ultimately, I think re-signing Tyrod Taylor, it helped out with a lot of different things. It gave the free agents, guys like Lorenzo, guys like Micah Hyde, the rest of the guys that signed, it gave those guys an idea of who the quarterback is going to be so that at least I know who he's going to be and I know I'm not just going to a team that has a quarterback battle because we all know if you have a true quarterback battle in camp, you have more than one, you don't have one.
That's right.
You know, so I think it let those guys understand that, which helped them bring guys in the offseason. I also think it put us in a position or put the fan base a little bit in a position where it's like, okay, at least we know – they're trying to do something this year. They're not just thinking about the next year and the years after that, you know. And that's what people wanted to know when they were going through this whole thing. If they don't sign back Tyrod, what are we saying? Are we just saying this season doesn't matter? Because there was nobody else out there. I'm sorry. Like, if you sign Mike Lennon, he doesn't really give you any hope. I don't care how much money you give him. He doesn't really give you any hope for the this season. You know, so I think bringing back Tyrod Taylor
in a group of maybe four guys that you could say that with: Tyrod, Kyle Williams, Shady. Mm-hmm. You know, given Shady's age and position and salary, there was an argument to move on from him if you wanted to say, hey, we know we're not going to be good. But if you say we want to be good, we're going to challenge, you bring him back. And that's what they did with all three of those guys. And then I even throw Lorenzo in there to bring back a guy at his age on a new deal.
Right. And a lot of people think that the Bills are so far away. You're not talking about a one-win team. You're talking about a team. Yeah, obviously this team has been 500 for a long time. When you're a 500 team, that means there are a couple of parts that can put you over the top. In this league, guess what? I mean, crazy things happen. You win games, you lose games, right? But this team is close to being a playoff contending team, right? So you need to make sure that you have a quarterback, at least for this year. We'll see what happens moving into next year. But at least for this year, we know who the quarterback is, which helped to bring everybody else back, those free agents. And I think everything else will fall into place.
I have a theory in this league, Donald. My theory is that aside from a couple of outliers on each side of the spectrum, every team is 8-8, pretty much. Every team has enough talent to be 8-8 in this league, aside from a New England with Brady or a Cleveland when you strip everything down, right? And you're saying we're going to be bad. Every team is 8-8, and then it comes down to who stays healthy, who basically maybe gets a few lucky breaks here and there to get to 10 wins or to stay at 6 wins. That's really what it comes down to.
Just look at how many teams were in the AFC playoff race last year.
Right.
Down to like the last 2 weeks of the season. Everybody had the same records, you know, and it was like the last 2 weeks of the season that the Dolphins end up winning a couple games, including here.
Yep.
And they end up squeaking into the playoffs. I mean, that's how it happens. There are a couple of teams that are like the Patriots that are always at the top. But other than that, everybody is around the same. It's either you got to stay healthy, you make a couple of plays that help you win a game or two, and next thing you know, you have 10 wins or 11 wins, and you squeak into the playoffs. And we all know it's just about getting to the playoffs. Get to that tournament, and everything else can fall into place.
Let's go out to the phone lines now. Let's go and start it with Al in Donald's home state of New Jersey. What's going on, Al? You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, Sal. It's been a while since I spoke to you. I believe the last time I spoke to you, you had just joined WGR. And I wish you a congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a 6-year run. I don't even know if you're talking to me or Donald, but both of us just joined. Thank you. I've been here 6 years. Donald, now you've been on WGR MSG.
I'm going on 1 year.
You're going on 1 year. There you go. So we're kind of both still in that honeymoon period, I guess, so to speak, in a way. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Donald Jones, Donald, you went to high school with my niece, Christina Porter, and she says she knows you. And she connected the fact that I'm a Bills fan, and I've never met you, Donald. It seems like I've known you. I admired the fact that you were you played, I believe it was Division II, and then you weren't drafted. You were walk on, and you actually made the team. There's a ESPN ranked Ryan Fitzpatrick as the fifth greatest quarterback.
I saw that.
And when I think about that, I'm like, well, when he played, you had Stevie Johnson, Chris Chandler, and the third best weapon was you. I couldn't think of anybody else he could throw to. So, I mean, I just want to give you big props. I'm really calling because I'm a fan of the Reed quarterback, okay? And a lot of people don't believe that the Reed quarterback could take a team to a championship. I think Russell Wilson? Seattle, yeah. He proved everybody wrong, but I'm just letting you know that in my opinion, in my heart, in my soul, the 4-3, if it lives up to its title, and we are capable of being competitive defensively, as we were before Rex Ryan came in, I believe Tyrod Taylor will take us to the playoffs. I don't think he has to change or improve, because a lot of people say, well, he needs to be more of a pocket passer. Do not take this man out of his game. Do not take him out of his realm. He does well. The statistics speak for itself. Yeah, he may not be able to pass the ball all over the field, but as far as moving and controlling the ball, that's all I want. And I'm from New Jersey, so I should know defense wins games, because that's what the Giants have proven for the past history. That is their track record.
All right, Al, make sure it's not as long between calls next time, okay, pal?
Okay.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I mean, that style of quarterback really hasn't been a Super Bowl champion too often. Russell Wilson has. I get it. But generally, throughout history, you got to be able to throw from the pocket. And I do believe Tyrod Taylor has to be able to throw from the pocket better to give this team a chance to be some sort of contender on that level. But I don't believe that he does not give him a chance because he's the type of read option quarterback, or, you know, a running quarterback, so to speak.
Right.
Those quarterbacks can be successful. But traditionally, you got to be able to throw from the pocket to win a Super Bowl.
You definitely have to be able to throw from the pocket. You have to be able to –
because Russell Wilson can.
Exactly. He can. He showed that last year.
That's
when
right.
he was hurt and he
That's
had
right.
to throw
That's
from the
exactly
pocket.
Right.
You know, you have to be able to make plays when the team needs you to make plays. And even the year that Seattle won, and then the next year when they went, even though Russell Wilson will run around a lot, he doesn't light up the stat lines or whatever, but he will make certain key plays, you know, and Tyrod Taylor hasn't been able to do that on a consistent basis. You know, he hasn't. Sometimes he'll overthrow a guy and it's like, oh man, we needed that one. There's always a game. Well, you can always look back in the games and it's like, man, if Tyrod Taylor would just hit that pass right there, you hit that guy going up the sideline,
right?
And that's a touchdown, you know? And so he just has to be a little bit more accurate. He just has to be a little bit more on time with his throws, you know? And
I think that's the bigger issue to me.
Yeah.
The timing.
You know, I don't want to change the way he plays his game at all. You know, I think you can win with Tyrod Taylor. I just want him to be more accurate and on time with his throws and throw a little bit better over the middle of the field, which he showed signs of in that Cleveland and Miami game last year, you know, signs that, okay, he wants to throw the ball over the middle to a guy like a Charles Clay. If he can do that consistently, then he'll be fine. I don't want to change his game. You start to change his game and say, we need you to just be in the pocket. That is not his game. And then he'll end up like a Colin Kaepernick. When they did that to Colin Kaepernick, he just couldn't do it. You know,
no doubt.
Brought in, they went four wide receivers and it was like, this is not his game, you know? So I think we should let Tyrod Taylor play his game. He just needs to be more accurate and on time with his throws.
More of your phone calls coming up next, and we're going to talk more about some of these choices we have in our poll. What was the most important and noteworthy, impactful move the Bills made this offseason? How about signing a Micah Hyde? I mean, now, he's not going to get a lot of votes in this poll. I know that. But we're going to make the case for it, at least, when we come back. Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio, filling in Murph, today on WGR and MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thanks for joining us here on WGR Sports Radio 550 and MSG on the TV side of things. Sal Capaccio in for John Murphy all this week. Donald Jones is here as well. We're getting closer to camp. We're just over 2 weeks away from the start of training camp out at St. John Fisher College in Rochester. It's going to be fun. 8:45 a.m. I know. Just over 2 weeks. 2 weeks from Thursday.
It's flying. It's coming.
This Thursday is the 13th. It's 14 days after that. And how about this? The two teams playing in the Hall of Fame game open basically a week earlier.
That's crazy.
So your training camps open next week, Donald. Two of them.
Wow.
That's amazing, right?
That is amazing. I remember when there was all this upheaval here at One Bills Drive, and Murph and I saying, like, man, we have like 9 months until this is over.
What are we going to talk about?
Like, we won't be able to really shut up this noise until we get back to training camp and back into
first
the season.
World problems here. What topics do we have to cover on the radio show today that we have paid to talk about sports? I'm with you, though. I'm the same way. I'm like, I got to do 12 to 3. What the heck am I going to talk about 12 to 3? But we make it work, right? You know why we make it work? Because people just have such an insatiable appetite for football. They really do. And
that's
you could pretty much talk about anything football related. You're going to get calls. You're going to get responses over social media. And then it just starts to go off into other topics. But you really realize how passionate this fan base is for football. I don't think it's like that everywhere, Donald.
I don't think it's like that everywhere either. And I come from, you know, New Jersey, where the market is huge. The media market is huge. But, you know, once football season is over, you have – well, the Knicks are terrible.
Right. But you know what? They create storylines itself.
Exactly.
You could talk about them every day.
You know, you have basketball. You have baseball. You have hockey.
Yep.
You know, here you have the hockey team and you have the Bills.
That's
you know,
right.
And so that's what people talk about. And the Bills – people love to talk about, especially right now. I mean, football season is approaching.
It's the season of hope and optimism.
Right.
No matter what, you're starting off 0-0, right?
Right.
And everybody's in the same boat. Who knows what's going to happen? Is this the year Brady's going to fall off and you have a chance for that division title? Who knows who's going to step up? That's the cool part.
Like, that's the storyline every year. That's like the hope storyline for everybody throughout the league, though, not just here in Buffalo. But before we get on to the next one, Olin the Mighty actually tweeted both of us and said they feel like Tyrod Taylor was handcuffed last year by the scheme that they were running.
Handcuffed.
Handcuffed.
That's right. And what did he say here? I'm just trying to look at some of the things he says. Well, I don't know if he was handcuffed necessarily, but I will say I think this scheme will give him more opportunities to see the field better. Yeah. He'll be out in space more, right?
He will.
Now, here's the thing. You don't want him running right and throwing left and stuff like that. but if you can play action, I interviewed last week I was in for you guys, not on the TV side, just on the radio side. I had John Harris on with me. John is the Sal Capaccio of the Houston Texans. He's the sideline reporter. And I asked him, what about Rick Dennison? Now, John came the year after Dennison in Houston, but he was all into watching that team on film all year and everything. And he said, Sal, let me tell you something. The quarterbacks under Rick Dennison, when he was in Houston, had a lot of time to throw because they got out in space. And I think if you have that for Tyrod Taylor, where he can survey the field, the whole field, and he can decide if he wants to run, I think that would really help him in all of these things we talk about, the timing or the middle of the field issues, because you can see it, you can see it develop, you can wait for it, whatever. That would be a big deal.
I think one thing that can help him also is, especially off this play action, getting him deeper in the pocket. You know, that's one of the things when you hear people talk about a Russell Wilson out in Seattle, that's one, or even a Drew Brees, the things that they have to do to help them be able to see over the middle of the field, because they're not big in stature, you know, so they need to do different things, and that's either moving pockets or get them deeper in their drops so that they can see more of the field. I think if he's going to be moving just naturally by the play action, but if you can get him deeper in his drop, then he'll be able to see a little bit more and he'll be able to make some throws.
And we'll see if that happens with Rick Dennison. I think we really didn't see much of his new offense in OTAs and minicamp. There wasn't much rollout. There wasn't much bootleg and play action. Mm-hmm. They were just doing basic install. But we're going to see a lot of that, I think, once training camp rolls around. Frank is in Buffalo. Frank, hi. You're on the John Murphy Show. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Good. Hang on. Here we go. I'm here. I just wanted to say that I'm looking forward to seeing what Sean McDermott can do for the team. I think he's got that good kind of hard-nosed attitude. He's not going to necessarily be the player's coach, but I think he's going to put a good team on the field. Looking forward to Micah Hyde being a strong safety over the middle, being the center fielder, looking to ball hawk. And I want to say also that I'd like to see Cardale Jones get a shot. I know we're talking about
I think he dropped. I don't know what happened there. I hope I did not hit the button. He wants to see Cardale Jones get a shot. I'm really sorry, Frank, if I cut you off. I don't think I did. Maybe it was you, but if I hit a wrong button, I apologize. My hands are over here. But I will touch on your last point, Cardale Jones. We just talked about him, Donald. I don't know how much of a shot he's going to get. He's not really going to get a lot of reps. In fact, his reps were pretty much fourth on the depth chart once OTAs and minicamp wrapped up.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was getting like one rep.
And you can't waste reps in training camp if you're preparing for a season.
You can't. I mean, they're not going to waste reps at all, you know. So when you'll really be able to see him in the preseason games is when you'll see him. You'll see him play in those. But during the course of training camp itself and practice, I don't think he's going to get that many reps, you know. And it's just the way this league is, you know. It's terrible. When he does get a rep or two or three, he's going to have to show off, you know. And he needs to be accurate. He needs to make some wowing, like eye-dropping plays so that the coaches are like, wow, like maybe we need to really pay attention to this kid. It's going to be hard for him to make this team. I truly believe.
And what happened at the end of minicamp was he got his one shot and his one rep in a two-minute offense. He threw an interception. That's just not – it's not going to cut it.
Right.
And he knows. He understands. He knew he was frustrated. And you hope he learns from it. You hope he gets better. Look, I would love nothing more. This team would be better if Cardale Jones rises to the occasion and pushes everybody else. Everybody wants that to happen. But I'll go back to, again, let's try to read the tea leaves. This regime now in place has ties to three quarterbacks. The one they don't is Cardale Jones. And even regardless of play on the field so far, if you just look at that, generally you're going to lean towards the guys that this group brought in. And that they brought in, essentially, with Tyrod's new deal, the other three.
And it's tough because Cardale Jones has so much upside. You know, just the raw potential,
physical
ability, how big he is, his arm. Like, he'll end up, if he doesn't make this team, he'll end up somewhere else. Somebody else will pick him up just because of that itself. Like, man, look at this dude. We have to take a chance on this guy. They'll pick him up. They wouldn't be able to keep him on the practice squad type of thing. But I would like to see him get a fair opportunity. I just don't think it's going to
happen. You know what that reminds me of? I said the same thing about E.J. Manuel. People said, no way, he's not going to. I'm like, are you kidding me? E.J. Manuel, who's still at his age, how young he is, the size he is, the arm he has. Like, someone's going to give him a shot somewhere in camp. It's going to be as a backup, but someone's going to bring him in. People debated and argued with me and said, ha-ha, he stinks, no way. Look what happened. He got signed not only by Oakland, but from reports I read, he's pushing for the number two job in Oakland.
Exactly. You know, I mean, teams – it just goes to show how many teams don't have quarterbacks.
Right.
You know, and that's a starting quarterback or a solid, viable backup quarterback, you know. So teams are going to take a shot on these guys, especially if you have that stature that E.J. Manuel has, the stature that Cardale Jones has. When you are that size and you have arm ability, you have strength, you can throw the ball deep down the field, teams are going to take a shot. Like, let's see what he can do. Bring him in here and see what he can do.
Let's move on to the second choice in our poll, the most noteworthy slash impactful move the Bills made this offseason. Donald and I are going to make the case for each one, even though we might not actually vote for each one. And by the way, Tyrod's new deal, good job. You did some convincing. It actually moved up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's now at 22%. The trade is at 48%. But the one that's running in last place, and I think this will wind up last, but let's make the case for it, all right? Mm-hmm. Because it's the only one really on the defensive side of the ball. It's the most impactful defensive move they've made, right, which is Micah Hyde, signing Micah Hyde. I think Micah Hyde's signing is, and let's like I said, let's play this as if we're going to make the case why it's the most impactful and talk about how impactful it can be. I would make you the case, Donald, that of all the issues the defense had last year, and there were numerous issues, losing their safeties and not having that safety in Aaron Williams, who they had, because before Aaron Williams and after Aaron Williams was a different team.
Yeah.
Once Aaron Williams went out on the Jarvis Landry hit, the rest of the year, this was a different defense, and not for the better.
Right.
They had a lot of issues back there. If you can put a guy back there, and I know it's a different scheme, I get it, but how important, I'm telling you, is having that quarterback in the middle of your secondary?
I mean, it's so important to have that guy back there for multiple reasons, though, right? Because your safeties are the ones that get everybody else into position. You know, and that's linebackers, that's guys up front, the corners. I mean, the safeties are the ones that are like, hey, what are you doing? Move over, move over. You know, they communicate to everybody. And then to have a guy who can move all across the field, a guy who can play deep third or play deep half or whatever and catch interceptions, he can also come down and cover a Gronkowski or somebody like that, cover one of your slot receivers, or even go outside and cover your number one receiver, as he's shown he's done in the past in Green Bay.
He can.
A guy that can do all of that stuff. Oh, and by the way, he can help out in the punt return game. To sign that guy, I mean, that is huge for this team, and especially for this defense that had so many issues in the secondary last year. I feel like last year there were three major issues with the defense. The first thing was communication.
No doubt.
Right? And there was so much going on. I mean, you had a lot of coaches on the sideline that looked like they were just a lot of stuff going on.
Paralysis by analysis.
Right, exactly.
Right? There's so much going on that everybody freezes and can't get everything straight.
We don't know what we're doing, you know? And so you had so many guys. You had, not enough guys on the field. You had too many guys on the field. You're not going to have that this year. I think the second thing was tackling. These guys did not tackle at all last year.
Good call.
And then the third thing was the secondary. You know, the secondary was just – it just wasn't that good. And if you want to add a fourth, it would be like Marcel wasn't
sure.
Marcel.
Sure.
And Marcel's a big piece. But when you add a guy like Micah Hyde, it changes the mentality of your defense, you know, and it can change a lot, especially on the back end. We all know Coach McDermott wants to be able to get pressure up front. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what he wants to do. He wants to be able to get pressure with the front four, not even with the linebackers, you know. And so – he is going to rely on guys like Micah Hyde in the back end to make sure we need you guys to lock down, because we want to be able to get pressure. We don't want to have to send a bunch of blitzes to be able to get to the quarterback. So we need you to do your job in the back end, and having a guy like Micah Hyde helps that out.
And I'll even – you touched on it. What you brought up is the two words, position flexibility, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what this regime is about. Sean McDermott wants guys on both sides of the ball that can do multiple things. Think about all the people they brought in. We know Micah Hyde has position flexibility. They draft Deion Dawkins. He can play tackle. Mm-hmm. He can play guard, right? They have guys at the linebacking position that can pretty much move inside or outside. Preston Brown, Reggie Ragland, they can do all of that. They even signed an undrafted free agent punter who can kick.
Right.
All right? I mean, this is what this regime is about. Zay Jones, he can play slot receiver. He can play outside. Trey White, he can cover a slot guy. He can play outside. I think Micah Hyde is the poster child for position flexibility on this team, as you brought up. And I'll take it to this level, in fact. He could be your big nickel guy against the run. You don't even have to have him covering a receiver, covering a tight end. What McDermott did in Carolina with his 4-3 defense, he used Shaq Thompson as the big nickel player. Now, Shaq Thompson's bigger than Micah Hyde. He's more of a linebacker-built guy.
Right.
Hyde's more of a safety-built guy. But the concept is the same. The concept is on downs where it's kind of like, is it going to be a run or a pass? I don't know. It's 3rd-and-2, maybe, something like that. I can take a guy who can cover people and put him in the box. If they want to run, I'm there. I got a guy who's a solid tackler, as you brought up. I got a guy who can be physical, who can jam somebody, who can stay home on the line. But also, when the ball snapped, if he has to, he can turn and run backward.
Exactly. And to have a guy who can do all of those things, I mean, it's huge. You have to have a playmaker in your in the secondary, especially at the safety position. And once Aaron Williams went down, you didn't have that playmaker. Corey Graham was a smart safety, but he wasn't as much of a playmaker.
Right.
He couldn't do as many different things that Aaron could. And so that's why I thought they brought in a guy like Micah Hyde. And I think Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, when I got to watch those guys in practice together, they look good together. You know, I know they know each other from.
How important is that, the two safeties being able to play? If you play, now they're not always going to play a two safety look.
Right.
How important is it to have two safeties who can kind of play off one another and understand that?
I think it's huge for defense, you know, because it's always huge to have guys next to you that you really understand, and that's across the entire field, really. But on the defensive side of the ball, when you look at up front, you hear Marcel talk about he loves playing with Kyle because
right.
they just know how each other, they know how to work with each other. You know, the linebackers, they need to know that, okay, I'm going to take on this fullback. You're going to be right behind me making the play. You know, I mean, you just have to have that feel for each other. And then the back end, it's very important because it is a passing league, and you need to really be comfortable with the guy next to you. And I need to know that if I take a shot on this, if this quarterback does this and I take a shot, you got my back, you know,
right.
going deep. You're not going to give up a touchdown. I might take a shot, and they might get some yards, but you won't give up a touchdown because you're back deep. I think it's very important to have two guys on the back end of your defense that understand each other, and they can work well off of each other.
Yeah, and I'll even go to, you know, maybe having a guy like Micah Hyde will allow the corners to have more trust back there as well. I think once Aaron went out, I think the corners, there were some times where I don't know if they knew if they were going to get the support they expected in certain areas of the field, in certain parts, in certain times on the back end. I'll look at that Seattle game. Early on in that Seattle game, Ron Darby was beaten deep, but I think Ron Darby thought he had help where he didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that was a big deal. So maybe it just allows even the corners to play a little better.
We see it all the time in the league. You see a corner get beat deep, and he turns around and he's looking like, what? You know,
we saw Stephon Gilmore look like that last year, right?
You know, and it's like, I thought I had help. Now, Stephon Gilmore, I think, was a different.
I get it.
But,
I know.
You know, for the most part, they are right. They're supposed to have a safety over the top, and the safety doesn't get there, you know. And a cornerback, you got to be able to trust that safety back there. I have to trust that if I go for this, you have my back
That's
there,
right.
You know. And if you don't trust that, then you don't really have anything when you're back into your defense.
We are going to take a timeout. When we come back at 1 o'clock, we're going to have Andrew Brandt tell us a little bit about the salary cap and where it's going in the NFL compared to the numbers that the NBA players are making, because a lot of NFL players have been kind of, you know, just making some noise about that.
Yeah.
But a little bit more before that with Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show with me, Sal Capaccio, on WGR and MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, we're going to continue our discussion on the most impactful move the Buffalo Bills made this offseason. We have Tyrod Taylor as one of the options, you know, bringing him back. We have Micah Hyde as another option, signing him. The drafting of both Trey White and Zay Jones. And then the acquisition, I should say, of the 2018 first-round pick, which I figured when I made the poll, Donald, this would win. And it is winning. But the Tyrod deal coming in still at 22%. I'm surprised the signing of Micah Hyde is in double digits. I thought it would be pretty low on the list. Mm-hmm. Now it's up to 11% right now. Look, we're doing a good job. Twice now we've talked about something and the percentage moved up because we convinced people.
I like that.
That's right. And the power of radio.
We should start putting the polls out after we start talking about it.
There you go. And then people will vote after that. We have a vote coming in here, I think, from Rick. For Micah Hyde, Rick's in California. What do you think, Rick? What do you think about this?
Hey, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Good. Well, I just want to throw my 2 cents worth there. I actually honestly thought Micah Hyde would be the biggest move we made because of the really cheap shot Jarvis Landry hit on us with the Aaron Williams, which I'm really quite upset about still. I won't lie. Hey, let me ask you, did Jarvis Landry ever come out publicly at least and apologize for that? Because I don't know if he ever did. Did he man up?
No, not that I know of.
I
think the only thing you could say, which wasn't even an apology, was, you know, that he went over to Bill's players and he looked like he was feeling bad and talking with them, but none of that happened. No, I think he did get fined, but he wasn't suspended, right? I think he got a penalty.
He got a penalty.
He went a penalty, but I don't think he was fined or suspended maybe, but he did get the penalty.
it's funny because I've talked to defensive players and I've talked to safeties, and even as a wide receiver, I know as a wide receiver, if I'm coming in on a safety, I would love for that guy to not see me coming, you know, and usually they see you coming because those guys have their eyes on the swivel, because you know that a wide receiver, that is what he wants. When there's a running play, there's a wide receiver typically coming in to block you, right? So I've talked to safeties, and they'll make the argument that Aaron didn't do what he should have done in that play. He wasn't aware like he should have been. And not to say that it wasn't a cheap shot, because Jarvis Landry, you know, he leapt off his feet and everything to take that hit. But, you know, Aaron does have to be a little bit more aware of where he is. And I've talked to Aaron about that, and he knows that.
Yeah, no doubt. And we just replayed it here, Rick, on our TV screen and on the MSG side of things. And, boy, every time I watch it, I cringe a little bit,
It was a tough hit, man. Yeah. It was bad.
I'll tell you, it still really haunts me right now. And to tell you the truth, I kind of strictly wish that somebody will cheap shot Landry sometime this season and his season that way.
Well, you know, I don't ever wish that upon anybody. Thanks, I appreciate the call. I know you're frustrated with it, but I don't think that's the answer to do that. I think the league needs to police itself, though. And if someone gets a clean shot on him, take it all day. No doubt about it.
Yeah, as long as it's a clean shot. As long as it's a clean shot, that the problem is, my father used to always say, hey, man, you better play the game. Don't let the game play you.
That's right.
And that means be aware of everything that's happening on the field. And the one rule that safeties know. Now, wide receivers are supposed to yell, crack, crack, crack.
Yes.
The cornerback is supposed to yell, crack, 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 when they see that wide receiver going at the safety. I don't know if their cornerback did that. But Aaron also has to have his head on a swivel so that he can see that guy.
If you watch that video, he's clearly just looking in the backfield. He does not look at all to his right where Landry's coming from. And I agree with you, and that's part of the on Aaron. But again, Aaron will admit that. I'm sure he would say, like, look, I got to be more aware. But, man, yeah, that is tough to even watch now when you look at it. And, look, Aaron walked off the field right next to me. I was on the sidelines. And it just was scary even watching him and the blood that was coming out and, you know, the state that he was in right there. And that's part of the reason that he's not signed, by the way. That injury, I think, added to his issues.
His neck issue,
things like that. And that's part of the reason he's not signed to anybody right now, I believe.
I've had a chance to talk to him. He's been on a couple visits. Mm-hmm. And I've had a chance to talk to him. And he says every team is like, you know, they love the way he plays the game, but
they don't want to take on that risk of what's going on with his neck and with his head. We're going to come back. We're going to talk with Andrew Brandt. So the NBA just really now kind of wrapping up the main part of its free agency season with the silly money being thrown around. And the NFL players have noticed about that. Is the NFL ever going to approach what the NBA is making as far as players? And what about the next CBA? Lots of rumblings about maybe another fight coming up in 2021. We'll get with Andrew Brandt next on the John Murphy Show.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Well, while we are in the offseason for both the Bills and the Sabres, Sabres development camp continues today. That is down at Harbor Center. So get on down there if you can. I was down there yesterday. It's a good chance to see a lot of the up-and-coming players that will challenge for roster spots in Buffalo, or either be maybe going to Rochester, back to where they are in juniors, but guys you may see in Buffalo down the road. It's pretty cool, and they have the French Connection 3-on-3 tournament tomorrow, but today it continues down at Harbor Center. We also have the Major League Baseball All-Star Home Run Hitting Contest going on tonight, the Home Run Derby. That's going to be pretty exciting to see, especially for a couple of Yankee fans sitting on this set today. You got both Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez involved in this Home Run Hitting Contest tonight. The Major League Baseball All-Star Break, the All-Star Game, will be tomorrow. And Wimbledon continues today. Rafael Nadal was playing a little earlier. I don't know if he won or lost, but he was down his set earlier. So we'll see if he's still up or down. Here we go. I got Nadal right here. Let me check you, give you the exact numbers here. Oh, Nadal. Here we go. He lost the first set 6-3. He lost second set 6-4. Down 2-0. He won 6-3. Now he's up 3-2. So it could be he has to have a three-set comeback here. We'll see if he can do that. All right. Sal Capaccio here with Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We appreciate you joining us here on WGR Sports Radio 550 as well as MSG. We're Really talking today about the most impactful moves the Bills made this offseason. You can give us your calls on that at 803-0550 or 888-552-550. But we want to step away for a minute and bring out on a friend of the program who joins us. You've heard him here before. He is the MMQB weekly columnist, a host of the Business of Sports podcast, and director of the Morehead Center of Sports Law at Villanova. And it is Andrew Brandt joining us on the line. Hi, Andrew. Good to have you. I know you've been on this program before. My name is Sal Capaccio. I'm filling in for John Murphy, but I think you know Donald Jones as well.
Yeah, I know Donald, and I know you, Sal, so I appreciate you guys having me. Always enjoy being on with you guys.
Well, thank you.
Well, I'll tell you, Andrew, the reason why we wanted to reach out to you today is the NBA has really seen some silly money thrown around as far as free agency, which is kind of commonplace for every sport comparatively, but it seems as though this year, more than any other, some NFL players are starting to chirp about that a little bit. Even here in Buffalo, Sammy Watkins tweeted something about, he said, we have to get paid more. He said he thinks his draft class will change the market, but he wasn't the only one. There were a lot of guys who did that. And I guess my question to you is, why is the NBA really, why do they get paid so much more comparatively, individually, and will it ever change as far as the NFL being able to make that kind of money?
Yeah, I've been talking about this a lot lately. I just recorded a podcast about this, just wrote about it for the MMQB. I mean, I think a lot to unpack here. What we really are talking about is player compensation, and I'll start with this. When I look at any deal, I analyze sports contracts, business contracts. The one thing you want to look for is, where's the allocation of risk? Who's taking on the risk in this business transaction? And for reasons that we can try to assess in a minute, really, NFL players take on the risk, where NBA teams take on the risk. And what that means is you have a contract, the early part of the contract, which is very low risk for NFL teams. If you're signing a guy, you feel good about him. First year, in some cases 2 years, rarely beyond that, the NFL team has the risk. You get past the 2 years, and then it's all on the player. Really, it comes down to essentially team options going forward. These illusory contracts, I point out that like a Derek Carr is getting $125 million, well, so is Gordon Hayward getting $125 million. Right. Gordon Hayward's $125 million is secure. Derek Carr's $125 million is worth $40 million at this point.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you just see those differences. It's one thing to talk about the values. Listen, we gawk at NFL contracts in March. That guy got $80 million. That guy got $90 million. That's not really the issue. I mean, again, the NBA is getting $150 million contracts. That's huge. That's staggering. That's something to gawk at. But the real difference is the security of the deals. The NFL teams have structured a league where they can get out. As you know, I was with the Packers 10 years, and we looked at each other after big deals and say, okay, when can we get out? If this screws up, if this guy stinks, if this guy gets hurt all the time, when can we get out? Now, NBA teams can have that conversation too, but they got to pay him.
Right.
And in the NFL, they don't.
Now, Andrew, people will break it down to it really just being as simple as, in the NFL, guys get hurt so much, so they're never going to give them guaranteed contracts. Obviously, in the NBA, they play a lot more games, and there are less people on the team. Is it really just that simple?
Yeah, a couple things. First, on the guarantees, I think the argument that the NFL players have more risk because they get injured so much is a great argument if you're an owner. I mean, but if you're a player, you can say, well, that's exactly why we need further protection than NBA and Major League Baseball players, because of that. So you can argue that either way. The other thing, Donald, which I've tweeted back at people, I mean, people have tweeted at me hundreds of times about the roster sizes and the number of games. So let's deal with number of games first, NBA and baseball having so many more games. Well, that assumes that NFL players just show up.
Right.
You know, the season lengths are similar, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. So I don't think you should really get into games. If you do, you're kind of assuming, okay, NFL players just sort of show up on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's season length should be the accurate barometer rather than number of games. As to roster sizes, I'm not sure what to say to that. I mean, yes, we're not stupid. We know NFL teams have more players than NBA teams. And people are making value judgments that, okay, because there are less players, these players are more valuable. I'm not sure that's right. I mean, are WNBA players more valuable because they're less players? Mm-hmm. Are Major League Soccer players more valuable than football players because they have less players and less and more games? So I just think where you want to take that argument, because you can take a lot of different places.
Andrew Brandt joining us here on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Let's talk about how it relates to the money being brought in, though, Andrew, in the CBA and how that's divided up. Because in the NFL, I believe the player's share is, what, less than 50%? You can correct me on that. And then in the NBA, it's maybe slightly more. And I think they even get more for some of the merchandising and things like that. But isn't that a big factor in how the CBA is structured, which is how much money is allocated? Because let's be honest, NFL rights fees are absolutely astronomical. So the league is making a lot of that money, but they're also keeping a lot more according to their own CBA.
Yeah, again, I was in NFL management. I looked around at colleagues with other sports, and I'm like, wow, you know, for my job, I'm in the best sport.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because we have control, and NBA players have control. So, listen, first of all, I do think I should give full disclosure. A couple years ago, I was approached to run as NFL PA executive director, and I decided not to for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, had a small consideration to actually take that position or run for it, not take it. But I did not. But, you know, I think the union has some responsibility here. I just think what really needs to happen is the collective money needs to be spent. Forget about how, you know, whatever the cap ends up being, if it's 47%, 48%, that's an issue, but maybe even a bigger issue is, are they spending it? You know, you got teams throwing over $40 million of cap room into the next year mm-hmm. to, again, be thrown over the next year because they're not using it.
Right.
So that's, to me, a problem that gets way under the radar by people that forget whatever the cap is, 150, 160, 170. Are they spending 170? A lot of teams are not.
So should the floor be raised to whatever percentage you have available that you have to spend?
It should be a lot higher. Right now we have a 4-year look at minimum spending. That should be annual, in my opinion, mm-hmm. or as close to it as possible. And it's 89%, and to me that should be higher. I mean, those are kind of things that are easy to sort of look at and say, okay, this could affect things.
Andrew, on the bare minimum, you look at the minimum salaries in the NFL, they are even a lot lower than minimum salaries in, you know, other sports. Do you think the minimum salaries in the NFL should go up as well? I mean, right now, I don't know what the minimum is. I would think it's somewhere around $600,000, something like that.
No, it's in the mid-fours, and, you know, then it goes up every year depending on, you know, what seniority you have in the league. I think that's important to get the minimums higher. You know, I think the important thing for NFL is, okay, we transferred all this money out of the rookie pool. Where's that going? Is there a real accounting that it is going to veterans? That was the goal.
Right.
So instead of Sam Bradford making $50 million guaranteed, you have the top picks making $20 million guaranteed. Where's that going?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think we just need to figure out, is the money being spent? We know NFL teams' asset values are going crazy, you know, averaging whatever it is now, over $2 billion. So something has to happen on the player side, too.
We're talking with Andrew Brandt. You can find him at the MMQB. He's a weekly columnist there, also host of the Business of Sports podcast and a director at the Morehead Center of Sports Law at Villanova. It's tough for me as a Syracuse guy to be talking with such a smart Villanova man and on the air here, but Jay Wright makes it all better because I do root for him, Andrew. I just want you to know that.
Good man right there.
Hey, Andrew, I wanted to get into a little bit. You look at a guy like James Harden in the NBA. He signed, a 4-year, $228 million contract. His shoe deal is something like over $200 million. Now, Odell Beckham signed a $25 million shoe contract with Nike, which is very big for an NFL player. Do you feel like with Odell Beckham's shoe deal, is that going to start to change in the NFL as well, where you see guys start to get bigger shoe deals?
Well, there may be a handful like him. You know, maybe you think of him, you think of Zeke Elliott, a few more, mm-hmm. but just not the level, as you said, with Harden, with Durant, with LeBron. Those guys, just the shoe sales are off the charts compared to NFL players. For whatever reason, you just can't see these guys' faces, whatever it is. I just don't see anywhere getting close. I mean, if you're talking about the numbers for Odell Beckham compared to Harden, it's not even in the same stratosphere. You know, NFL players have to make their money on the field. NBA stars make it all over the place. But, again, we're talking about brands, and James Harden has become a brand unto himself. And I think Beckham's a good comparison. I think he's one of the few that's really becoming a brand as an NFL player. And that's what they need. They need more of that to really sort of sell the game. Cam Newton's another one. You just see these players, okay, kids are thinking, are looking at these guys, and they become brands in themselves, but they're not going to demand that kind of shoe money, that's for sure.
You know, part of the reason I think that is, Andrew, is you're talking about a sport where guys wear tons of equipment and helmets. You don't see their face on TV all the time. In the NBA, in baseball, as soon as they're on TV, you identify. You know who that guy is. Odell Beckham's different because he has a distinct look, maybe, the way he does his hair and things like that, and his game, obviously. But, you know, it's tough to market NFL guys compared to NBA guys when you don't see them. You don't know what they look like with their helmet off. And I don't know if I'm a company that I want to invest in somebody who says when he's on TV, I don't know if people are going to recognize him.
Yeah, and I was an agent before with the Packers, and I was, you know, trying to get NFL players' deals was tough. You just kind of had to focus on the bread and butter, shoes, helmets, things that are involved, sort of endemic to the playing the game, rather than the McDonald's, Coca-Cola type deals are really going to be few and far between for NFL players, but they are too for NBA players beyond, you know, that handful. So we're really talking about a small number of players that get the huge marketing dollars.
Andrew, tell me about the next CBA and what really will be the biggest fight. Will it be this allocation of dollars to salary cap and to players? Will it be drug testing? Will it be scheduling? What is really going to be the biggest fight when the deal is up, I believe, 4 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is priorities always. And I am not in the NFLPA's head. I don't know what their priorities are. I know what the NFL's priorities are. You just talked about it with the split. I mean, the NFL last time, I covered that for ESPN, and it was always clear. Their priorities were getting a better economic split. And whatever it was before, 51% of the players went down to 47, depending on how you look at it, 46 to 48%. And we know that's going to be their priority. We don't know what the NFLPA priority is. Is it going to be that? Is it going to be tag? Is it going to be drug testing? Is it going to be commissioner power? You know, there are a lot of things people bring up all the time, franchise tags, but they just have to figure out how to prioritize and how to negotiate based on that list.
But one of the things we do know is, you know, the NFL is always preparing for that happening, the NFLPA. In fact, I just read where DeMora Smith has basically told players to start saving now. But isn't it tough in a league where you have so much turnover? I mean, the next time the CBA comes up, I mean, very, very few people will have actually been playing in the league the last time, so it's very hard for them to recognize what they're in for because you have such a turnover in the league, and players are thinking, oh, yeah, if they've never been through it, Andrew, maybe they don't understand what the battle they're in for.
Well, you mentioned it, 4 more years. I mean, a 10-year CBA is an extraordinary term. And the other sports have been able to have much shorter CBAs, so there's more negotiation, things change. You know, you're going to look at the TV rights. You're going to look at all the things that have changed since 2011 when you did the last one and really try to account for it. But I wouldn't expect another 10-year deal.
Andrew Brandt, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Thanks for the insight, and always good having you here on the John Murphy Show. Thank you.
Always enjoyed, guys. Take care.
All right, that is Andrew Brandt. You can find him at the MMQB. He's a weekly columnist there, host of the Business of Sports podcast, and a director at the Morehead Center for Sports Law at Villanova. Interesting insight there. And I don't see it changing ever for the NFL, for players.
I just don't.
They can think and want it to change. But.
Right. It's, the fact of the matter is, I remember after my first year, I think the minimum I might have made almost $400,000, mm-hmm. we went into a lockout, you know, and it was like, all right, we're in a lockout now. How long is this lockout going to last? Because there are a lot of guys that don't make millions of dollars, you know, and there are a lot of guys that will struggle if you go too long in a lockout because, you know, guys just don't do the right things. Now, I didn't spend a lot of money, but guys that do spend a lot of money and not knowing, they're like, man, we got to get out of this lockout. Let's just get back to playing football.
You know? No doubt.
And the NFL owners know that. You know, that's just the fact of the matter. They know.
The owners can always withstand and hold out longer.
Right, exactly.
I mean, players need to play.
They need to play.
Owners are going
to
make
the NFL.
They have money already.
Right. The NBA is a little bit different. If they wanted to go into a lockout, you have a lot more guys in the NBA making millions of dollars. Even their minimums are a lot more than what they make in the NFL. And so they can go into a lockout for a little bit of longer period than the NFL can. And the owners will always know that, you know. And so I don't think this is ever going to change for the NFL.
I agree. And when I read when Sammy tweets what he did, and I think it's fine. I get it. I understand why. I don't blame him for thinking that way. He sees the money that these NBA guys are getting, and he's like, I put my life on the line every day going out there, right? The thing is, though, blame your own union.
Yeah.
Don't blame the league. Don't blame the fans, nothing like that. Not that he was. But if you really want to get mad about it, blame your union for negotiating a deal that gives you less money of the pie than the NBA players get of the pie in their league.
Exactly. And you're doing so much more in terms of your body,
Putting
your body in danger. You know, it really is on the union. The union is the one. And then to negotiate a 10-year contract was just like, 10 years? That is a long time that we have to be under these rules, you know? So the owners are just raking in the money for another 10 years. And like you said, the other leagues have shorter CBAs. They have shorter contracts, you know? So there's a lot more negotiation. There's a lot more turnover and things that are happening. And so maybe in this next CBA, they need to make it 5 years or something like that so that every few years you can come back to the table and negotiate.
See, now you're talking like a player, Donald, because as a fan, I love a 10-year deal because I know I'm going to see football for 10 years uninterrupted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you're right. As a player, you're right. Mm-hmm. We should do a 5-year deal. Look what happened, this 10-year deal, and we got into it, and wow, we didn't realize it might have been not as good for us as we thought when we did it. As a fan, in 2011, I remember when they signed it and they said, guess what, it's a 10-year deal. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, that's great.
We'll have another chance of a lockout for 10 years.
I know, right? That was great. I hope they do something like that again. But you're right. The business side of it says maybe we shouldn't do it. And the point I brought up about the players, think about this. The next time the CBA comes up, there's not going to be a lot of players in the league that were actually part of the last CBA lockout. So they're not really preparing themselves for a lockout. They're not thinking, remember what happened last time? I'm going to be smarter.
Right.
Those guys are out of the league by then.
Exactly.
Unless you're a Tom Brady that's been in for so long, even if he's there by then, some of these quarterbacks have been around. Some guys, you know, Lorenzo's been around over 10 years, you know, but that's generally not the case. So you're dealing with really a bunch of guys that don't know any better and aren't going to prepare quite the way you want them to.
A guy like Lorenzo probably won't be in the league.
Correct.
When they go another 4 years.
And he can try and educate as much as he wants, but doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Some of these young guys, who are they going to listen to? By the way, minimum salary now in the NFL, $465. What'd you make, about $380, $360?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there, right? $465 now. All right. That's not bad.
And what about NBA?
I got to look that up. I don't know. NFL minimum salary right now, if you're an undrafted free agent or you're just coming in, maybe even on a sixth-round deal or something like that, $465. And then it goes up from there for if you have a year experience. It jumps pretty quickly, though. If you have a year experience, you're making $540. So that's a nice jump. Then you go up to 615, 690, 775, 900. And now if a 10-year veteran signs for the veteran minimum, $1 million.
$1 million.
So that's 10 years in. The vet minimum is $1 million. That's what they get paid, by the way, cash. The NFL actually gets teams get a reprieve on the salary cap if that's the case. They get them for less on the cap.
And most guys who are 10 years in have had major contracts.
Yes.
You don't just go – you don't play in this league making them the minimum for 10 years. It just doesn't happen like that. You've usually signed a big contract. You've been one of the star players in the league, and now you're just hanging on.
Yeah.
And so now a team signs you for the minimum, you know. But most guys in the NFL do not make millions of dollars. It's just different. Everything is different. You know, that's why I brought up the Odell Beckham shoe deal, because it's like everybody's like, man, Odell Beckham just got a $25 million shoe deal. Well, look at what LeBron got as a rookie. As a rookie coming straight out of high school, his shoe deal was like $80 million. You know, I mean, it's crazy what these dudes are getting in the NBA, but it's a different sport. You get to see those guys' faces, the tattoos, everything. Their shoes, kids are buying their shoes like crazy. They're buying LeBron James sneakers. My son is about to be 7. This dude, all he wants is LeBron's and Kyrie's. I'm like, come on, man. But kids are not buying an Odell Beckham cleat. You know, I mean, they might. But there aren't that many guys in the NFL that had the type of brand that Odell Beckham does. So, and you look at the superstar status that Odell Beckham has, he can't even get a $100 million shoe deal. $25 million is all he can get.
He's not asking. Your son isn't asking for Lonzo Ball, big baller shoes yet, is he?
He's definitely not asking for that. He wouldn't get those if he wanted.
How much are these shoes when you go shopping? The ones you don't buy, how much are the shoes you don't buy that you look at and you go, uh-uh?
I mean, my son's shoes right now are about 80 bucks.
Okay.
80 bucks, and he's
but
seven.
But there are some that are probably out there you see for what, 150, 200?
You might, well, not in his size. You'll see him. You'll see a couple pairs for maybe 110, something like that. And I'm like, I'm not buying that for
right.
you. Because you run through these like crazy.
That's
I mean,
right.
all
you're
going to do is go to
and
school and just play and play and play, and you're going to grow out of them like that, you know? So it's crazy how much LeBron and Kyrie and Steph Curry, well, his shoes are, but a lot of these guys are selling shoes. It's crazy how much they're making just off of their shoe deals. I mean, you look at LeBron James. He got a $35 million. Now, he's LeBron James. But you're talking about a superstar status, Odell Beckham, superstar status. LeBron got $35 million a year for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry got, like, stock ownership in Under Armour.
That's the way, you know, things are going now to try and get them to, you know, get on these deals. But they can't do it for teams, but the companies, they can do that for sure. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Jim, who gives us a call before the break. Hi, Jim. You're on WGR and MSG.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. In regards to the deals, how many players you got in an NBA team?
Yeah, we went through this. 12, right, on the roster? 12?
Yeah.
We talked about this with Andrew Brandt. I mean, of course, so you're going to say the NFL is 53, of course. I mean, it's simple economics, right?
Right.
Right, plus the games. How many games does it play in the NFL? How many do you play in the NBA?
Well, you know, but here, I get that, but I don't know about the games argument because you're also playing in stadiums that are 80,000 seats compared to stadiums that are 20. So, I mean, 8 games times 80,000. So you are selling, you know, pretty good number of seats for, you know, pretty high prices. It's not just the games. Again, Andrew Brandt made the point, Jim, if you didn't hear him, he made the point, yes, that's right about the games, but the seasons are pretty much about the same length. It's about how long you're working in the season, not just the games.
Not just the games. And you, to be honest, you do get paid also for practice. You know, I mean, you come to practice every day.
Oh, by the way, let me ask a question to clear something up. You don't get a game. You don't get paid your salary until you play games, though, right?
You don't get game checks until games.
Until you get games. Okay, right. I mean, that is kind of self-explanatory, but it's not like you sign a deal, Donald. Let's say, I don't know, Micah Hyde signs this new free agent deal with the Bills. He doesn't start getting that money in training camp. He gets a separate kind of pay for training camp, right?
If he got a signing bonus.
But what do you get for training camp, then?
For
what did you get when you were in training camp?
For training camp, you will make $1,500 a week or something like that.
Okay, you but your
like
actual salary, when you were making $360, $380.
You don't get that until game day.
Okay.
You know, you don't start to make that until game weeks.
So you only get paid during the season.
Right, unless you have other stipulations in your contract, like signing bonuses for workout bonuses, things like that, you don't get paid.
Right.
You only get paid during the season.
Okay.
So that's why it's like you have guys that will make the minimum, which is $460. You only get paid in the season. And you got to stretch that out for the rest of the year.
Which is
that's
also 17
weeks. And you got to stretch that out for the rest of the year.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, you're getting taxed in 9 states, you know, because you play in 9 different states.
This is all stuff people don't know that they have to. Some people know, but, you know, a lot of people don't know. How do you file those taxes? Does someone do that for you?
You got to have somebody good.
So you get taxed everywhere, right?
You get taxed in every state that you play in.
Except for the ones, what about in Florida? You wouldn't, right? There's no state income tax.
That's
so
guys, when they go to like the Dolphins or Tampa Bay, they're like, bet. Like, I don't have state taxes here.
That's amazing.
So their checks are a lot bigger. You go somewhere like California, it's like, come on, man.
It's a lot more.
It's a lot more.
It's incredible, really. By the way, that also explains why lockouts, the NFL players want to get their – they're not getting checks in the season – in the offseason. They got to get paid. They got to play to get paid no matter what.
Exactly.
And that's why you have to save. Reminds me of when I was a teacher. Same thing when I was a teacher. You could basically – you got all your checks for the summer on the last day of school. So basically it gets to the last day of school and they give you, hey, here's your 4 checks for the summer.
Really?
Now, I don't get paid in the summer. Yeah, this is the way it was when I was a teacher in Florida.
Wow.
And so you don't get paid for the summer. So you know what I did? I put all that money in the bank and I paid 3 months ahead of my car bill, 3 months ahead of my mortgage, 3 months ahead of my electric bill.
Right.
And I said, just keep it. It diminished all that money, but I said, at least I don't have any bills essentially
for
3 months.
Imagine how many people don't do that.
Right.
So it's the same in the NFL. You have some guys that will budget it the right way, but imagine how many guys don't do it. You know, and I remember when I was at the combine, I remember at the combine, TJ Houshmandzadeh came. TJ Houshmandzadeh. He came and talked to us at the combine. And he talked about Ocho Cinco. Now, Houshmandzadeh at this time was making the minimum. Ocho Cinco was getting paid. And Ocho was coming to borrow money from Houshmandzadeh, who was making the minimum, because he had spent all of his money during the season.
This is interesting stuff. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. We thank Andrew Brandt for joining us here, and really some insightful stuff coming from him. When Donald and I come back, we'll get back on our topic today about the Bills as far as the most impactful signing, or I'm sorry, the most impactful personnel move they made this offseason. But before we do that, Donald, home run derby tonight. Two of our New York Yankees are in it.
That's right.
I'm going to see if you think one of them can beat the defending champ, Giancarlo Stanton, when we come back on The John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of The John Murphy Show.
Back here on The John Murphy Show, Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones. I'm filling in for Murph all week. Glad to be here. Good to be here. Murph will be back next week. And then we're going to be ramping things up to training camp. We're going to have Terrence McGee come on at 2 p.m. today, so make sure you're tuned into that. You all remember Terrence McGee, I'm sure, one of the better defensive backs to play for the Buffalo Bills, especially, you know, over the last, 20, 25 years, especially during this drought, one of the better players, I would say. And tonight at MSG, on MSG at 9 p.m., the latest installment of Top 10 Draft Diamonds. Why are we having Terrence on? We're having a show on? You think he might be a part of that? That's how this works. So we're going to bring Terrence on to do that.
Fourth round. So the draft diamonds is everybody from the fourth round to seventh round, I believe. No undrafted guys. Just everyone from the fourth to seventh round.
Leaves you out.
That would leave me out. And anybody else who was a good player that was undrafted.
Leaves Fred out.
Yeah.
Fred can't
be on
there.
Drafted.
I did a poll recently. I did several polls recently. I'll bring this up to Terrence. Let me see if I can find where I did this. But I'll bring it up again. A while back, right before the draft, Donald, right before the actual NFL draft, every day I had done a poll on my Twitter feed, at Sal Sports on Twitter. I did this. I said, basically, who was the best Bills first-round pick ever? And I gave a bunch of choices. Then who was the best Bills second-round pick ever? And I gave a bunch of choices, and I went through. I got to the fourth round, and I think Terrence McGee was a option for me. But I couldn't put him on there. He couldn't win because Andre Reed was drafted in the fourth round.
Oh, yeah.
But he was on there. I'll have to bring it up to him. I have to see if I can find this here and find the other guys that I had on there. But it was, I mean, that's no one's going to not vote Andre Reed as the best fourth round pick ever, right?
I don't think so. Highly doubt that.
98% chose Andre Reed. Butch Bird was on there, too. Andre Reed was the number one pick. So there you go.
As he should have been.
As he should, obviously. Did you see him on Celebrity Family Feud last night?
You know, I didn't. I seen that tweet go out, but I didn't get to see him. Who else was he on there with?
Marshall Faulk, Anthony Munoz, a bunch of Hall of Famers.
Okay.
I think Rod Woodson, was on there. I think if I recognize the face because I turned it on late. And they went against current NFL PA, like current NFL All-Stars, Le'Veon Bell. I think DeAndre Hopkins was on there.
Who won?
The Hall of Famers. And they got to the next round, and they got the bonus. They won everything.
Wow.
They did the whole, you get the 200 points, woo!
Did that bonus go to?
I don't know what they did. I don't know. I have no
idea.
It should
go to charity.
It should. It probably did. I'm not positive, but it probably did. So they were on there.
Drinks for
them. And then I looked at Marshall Faulk, and he just looks older, and it reminds me that I'm older. And I'm like, man, I remember when this guy was running at San Diego State and just tearing it up.
Old.
I'm 44, but you know, like Marshall was in college when I was in college. Wow. And I'm like, man, yeah, this guy was incredible.
You are old.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. 803-0550, 888-550-2550, the number to call. So tonight, Major League Baseball All-Star Game going on. It is the same format as it has been the last several years, and the format is basically brackets. All right, so you're going to have 1 through 8 seeding, and one is going to go off against 8, and then 4 against 5, 2, 7, 3, 6.
Right.
I'm going to ask you who's going to win each one of these brackets. Are you ready? Who's going to win?
Wow.
Each one, and then we'll get to a home run derby champion.
All right,
so number one is Giancarlo Stanton going against our guy, Yankees catcher Gary Sanchez. Now, what you need to know about Giancarlo Stanton is he's the defending champ, and he hits monster bombs. He has 26 home runs already this year. He plays for the Marlins in his home park
I was just about
tonight.
To say, it's in his home park. So I think
but Gary Sanchez has 13 home runs, but he's also only played 57 games this year. So if you add in the games he missed, yeah, he'd be a 20 home run guy this year maybe.
Got to go with the hometown guy.
Yeah.
He knows the stadium. You know, it's just I got to go with the hometown guy.
Yeah, I think so too.
Even though I'm a Yankees fan.
I think so, too. We'll both go with Stanton on that one. All right. And then you're going to have, in that same bracket, Mike Moustakas, who is a 25-home-run guy from the Kansas City Royals, going against Miguel Sano, a 21-home-run guy from Minnesota. Moustakas against Sano. Who wins this one? Lots of M's in there. Mike Moustakas, Miguel Sano.
Mike Moustakas.
I'm going to agree with you. I like Moustakas, too. He's the 4 seed. He'll beat Sano, the 5 seed. And then our guy Aaron Judge going against Justin Bour. Justin Bour, Marlins, 15 home runs. Judge, of course, leading Major League Baseball, 30 home runs. First rookie to do that since Mark McGwire, by the way, get to 30 before the All-Star break, I believe.
I got to go with Aaron Judge.
For sure, man. How
I mean,
can you not
I
pick
just
Aaron
have
Judge?
To. I think I'm taking him to win the whole thing. This
Ooh,
dude is...
all right. We'll see. We'll see. Okay, here we go. Cody Bellinger, phenom for the Dodgers. 25 home runs so far this year against Charlie Blackman from Colorado with 20 home runs. Who you got? You got 3 seed Bellinger against the 6 seed Blackman.
3 seed Bellinger.
Yeah, me too. And here's the thing. Blackman plays in Colorado, so maybe a few inflated home runs there,
right?
I mean, I don't know about that, but he did make it. They're having a nice, they're having a nice season. Stanton, Giancarlo Stanton, then goes against Mike Moustakas. 26 for Stanton, 25 for Moustakas. The 1 seed against the 4 seed. Who do you like?
Stanton.
Stanton's got to win this. He's got to get to the finals at least. Then yeah. Judge goes against Bellinger.
Judge.
I'm going to go with Judge as well. Because I'm a Yankee guy, I'm going to go with Judge. So we're both on the same page here with no disagreements.
Mm-hmm.
The final. Nobody would be surprised if it's the 1 seed, Giancarlo Stanton, against Aaron Judge, the 2 seed.
Who you Aaron Judge, baby.
I mean, I love Judge. Aaron Judge. I'm not going to, in good conscience, pick him to beat Giancarlo Stanton, though, in a home run contest at his own ballpark.
Because he's a rookie?
Well, it is different. He is a rookie. He's never been in the home run contest. And I think Stanton has been. It's different. It's a different feel. It's not
it
batting
is.
Practice.
It's like,
you don't have a cage.
Right.
You got everybody in the stadium watching you in your batting practice.
And you
got
to get on a roll.
And you know it's to hit home runs. Batting practice is to work on things,
right?
You're actually trying to hit home runs now to do this. But also because, I mean, he's a really good home run hitter, Giancarlo Stanton.
He is.
He's done it.
He is.
So I'm going to go with the champ. Stanton, as much
I'm
as I love
go
Judge.
With the rook.
All right. So you like Aaron Judge.
If he was to win it, would he be the first rookie to ever do it?
I don't know. I don't think so. But we can check on that. I don't know. That's a good question. Hmm. Somebody's going to tell us. I don't think so. I feel like other rookies have done it.
Hmm.
Okay. Right? When did the home run derby start? Late 80s?
Something like that, yeah.
It's been around a long time.
It has.
Was it around in 87, 88 when McGwire was a rookie?
To me, was it? I'm not sure. But – to me, to be honest, it's good to have these guys in it. It really makes guys watch it. You know, I mean, it makes people watch it because baseball is a sport that people are not watching. At least people I know, they are not watching baseball like they used to. And I feel like their ratings are declining. Don't quote me on that.
No. I understand what you're saying. I listen to the Yankees sometimes in my car.
Mm-hmm.
And we were driving yesterday. I was listening to the game, another loss. And my wife looks at me and goes, can you please turn something else on? It is so boring to listen to this.
Yeah.
It is, right?
Well, what can they do?
But as a sports guy growing up on baseball, it's not as boring to me.
Right.
And I tried to explain to her. I said, well, here's the thing about baseball. Baseball is the toughest to do play-by-play because I've done it. But it's also the coolest because you're trying to paint a picture for everybody. And if you're driving and you're listening or you're sitting on your porch and you're listening to baseball like everybody used to do back in the day, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
You get the imagery of the stadium and the guy and the cleats and the dirt and all that. I think that's what's cool. But that doesn't work in today's society. Everything is now, instant.
And I want it now. I need some action right now.
And it doesn't work. Baseball on radio, how are you going to do that?
Right. Now, I've also heard that hockey is one of the toughest sports to call as well.
Hockey's tough because of the action. I mean, I've done that, and I'll tell you, it's tough to do a hockey game because by the time someone's got it on their stick – and if you don't know the player, and you have to kind of take a quick glance because, I mean, obviously guys who do it for a living on the level every day and they know all these players, but if you're someone like me, 2 new teams you've never done, you got to learn the players. By the time you look down, you see a number, you look up, he doesn't have the puck anymore.
That's
somebody
crazy.
Else does. And you're like, who's got it now?
You have a spotter at least?
Yeah, well, not really. In what I've done, not really, but people will help you out. But it's tough, man. You look down, you say it, so you got to be – especially radio, you got to be so descriptive. That's why these guys like Rich Gennaretta are amazing at it.
Yeah.
So hockey's the toughest from that aspect. Baseball is the toughest from filling the gaps. Hockey's the toughest for all the inaction and who's got the puck, what they're doing with it. It never stops. Baseball is the toughest because you
got to
fill time. Oh, my God, you have
it
to
It always
time.
Stops. You got to be able to talk and just keep going.
All right, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to make the case for the drafting of Tre'Davious White, and Zay Jones, Trey and Zay, as I like to call them, and why they were the most impactful moves the Bills made in 2017 in the offseason. We got our poll up. Head over to John Murphy Show on Twitter. You're going to see it. What was the most noteworthy slash impactful personnel move made by the Bills this offseason? Tyrod Taylor's new deal, signing Micah Hyde, drafting of White and Jones, trading for a first-round pick next year. We'll tell you the results of that as we roll on here. Still got another hour left of that poll if you want to go over and vote right now on WGR and MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, back here on John Murphy Show, WGR, MSG, Sal Capaccio in with Donald Jones, 803-0550, 888-552-550. I think we have a caller here, Gary in Rochester, who wants to chime in. Hi, Gary, you're on WGR and MSG on the John Murphy Show. What's up?
Hey, it's actually Greg, but before I give you my take, I got a request for you, Sal.
Yeah.
On your game day, you know, you guys are, when Murph has his show for game days, you know, there's a promo that runs down your TV and turn up your radio. And I would love to do that, but the problem is you guys run before the TV happens, so you're talking about the play before I can see the play.
Well, I mean, that's a problem, obviously, with the delay on TV. I get it. I understand that.
If you guys delayed the show, then I could DVR it. You would get.
All that's above my pay grade, Greg. I don't know how all that works in technology. I'm sorry.
Your pay grade would increase if you got more people listening to the show. So
yeah, I got you.
Make that happen, because I would love to listen to you.
All right, we appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, but my take is it's not a particular player or move, which is the biggest impactful thing. It's the fact that we've changed the coaches, changed the scheme to fit our personnel, I think. The fact that our defense is going back to the same scheme that we had 2 years ago when we were dominant with a lot of the same players up front, which was the reason that scheme worked so well. I think that is the biggest factor of if they're going to be successful as to why they're going to be successful. Players are in better positions this year, and hopefully they have coaches that, you know, don't put up with the crap that's been going on the last couple of years, and they're a little more disciplined and know where they're going. And it's just, you know, it's just go and attack instead of thinking out there. I think that's the biggest offseason.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that's a great point. And, you know, I think one that you and Chris brought up when Brownie was in as well, which is all of the different thinking and changes that the checks, the guy moves here, they go 2x1 here and trips here, and with this guy, it's affecting over there. And one of the points Brownie made was even a guy like Preston Brown, who is a son of a coach, mm-hmm. who's really smart, when he can't even really get with the checks and the changes and get the communication down, that should tell you something. You know, Don, one of the failings of the last coaching staff, and I really, you know, everybody wanted it to work with Rex, right? We all wanted it to work with the coaching staff. There's no doubt. You want it to work all the time. But one of the failings of the coaching staff was really the ability to recognize that they were putting their players in a disadvantageous position, right, by having so much of that in that they couldn't just play football.
I'm telling you, I mean, less is more in this sport. And as a fan, when you watch the game, you might see a 3 wide receiver set and they'll run a certain play. Then they'll go with 2 tight ends, 1 receiver, and they'll run the same play, but just out of a different set, you know. But or they might flip it over to the other side of the field. You never know. For the most part, you have all of these plays in the playbook. Coaches don't use all of those plays. They use the plays that they're good at. That's why you rep those plays over and over and over in practice,
yep,
because they only call 20 different plays in a game, but you window dress and you do so much motions and shifts and different things, and it doesn't allow the defense to understand what you're doing. The Patriots are very good at it. You know, they'll come in with 2 tight ends, 2 wide receivers, and then go 5 wide with the running back out there and run the same play as if they put 5 wide receivers on the field, you know. And so I don't like when coaches try to do way too much and the guys can't get it. Now, obviously, yeah, you need to be smart. You need to understand the playbook. But this is what we're good at. Run what we are good at. The teams, you even talk to the Bills players from the Super Bowl years, they'll tell you we ran what we were good at. We ran the running plays that we were good at. We flipped it over and ran it different ways, but we ran the plays that we were good at.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. It reminds me of the movie Remember the Titans. Do you remember what he said? And Remember the Titans. Did you ever see Remember the Titans?
Oh,
of course
yeah.
You did, right,
mm-hmm.
with Denzel. And Denzel says to his assistant coach, the assistant coach is like, dude, you got like 5 plays here. And he goes, yep, it's like Novocaine. Just
right.
Give it a time, it'll work, right?
I'm telling you.
He's got to do that. And no, that's right. I agree. And as I get made fun of by some of the guys in the Bills PR department sometimes for reminding and saying how much I love the wing tee because I coach the wing tee and they make fun of me for that, and that's okay. I'll say that's what the premise of that is.
The wing tee.
It is, but that's the premise of that offense, which is Marv Levy ran it when he got to the NFL, and you can't run it now, but the premise is, essentially, you run basically like five plays each way. That's it.
That's
and
it.
You rep the living heck out of them.
Right.
And you're going to get really good at them.
That's
and that's what you do.
That's what you do every day in practice. I'm telling you, when I was in junior college, we ran maybe 10 plays, the same plays over and over and over. We ran the same drills over. We used to, oh, man, my coach, Coach Grandy, we would come into practice, and it's like, Coach, come on, man. Like, can we do something else? And he's like, no, we're going to do this, and we're going to master it.
Right,
you know, and that's what you have to do in this league. You do what you're good at. You can window dress. You can move, motion, shift, do all types of different things. At the end of the day, we're running the same play from a different formation.
Well, it's so funny you say that because I had the coach that I work with when I was coaching in high school is we ran this wing tee, and he had a counter, you know, one of those, you just hit one, it goes to one, hit it, goes to two. And he would tell the kids every year, we will run sweep right 100 times between now and our first game. Wow. And you're like, what? And you win. We ran sweep right 100 times and sweep left, by the way. But the point was, we're going to get as good as we can at it because it doesn't matter if they know what's coming, we're going to do it. And it didn't. And look, we can relate this to defense because on the defensive side of things, we're just going to make sure everybody knows exactly where they're supposed to be all the time.
Right.
Not, well, yeah, but if they do this and you got to go here, and if they do that, there's got to be some of that, Donald, because it's an X's and O's game. It's a chess match. But really, at the heart of it, football is football. And if you just let guys line up and say, defeat the man in front of you and go to the ball. That's what it's about.
Right. I mean, you look back to the coaches like the Tony Dungys that have always ran cover two, Tampa two. That's what they run. You know, now they might come out every now and then and go with a man, you know, in the red zone. They might do something different. But coaches run what they run, you know, and that's how it should be. You should never have, you know, four coaches on the sideline making all types of different checks and it's going in to the guys on the field, and the guys are on the field like, what? Like, I don't even know what – I remember talking to some of the guys at the Cincinnati, after the Cincinnati game, and those last plays of the game when Cincinnati was driving and they were trying to win the game, I remember those guys saying, like, we had no clue what we were running on the field, you know, which is why they ended up calling a timeout in that last drive. It was like, what is that? We don't even know what that
is. You can't have that happen. You know, that's why you got to situations like in the Miami game with 10 guys in the field.
Yeah.
All of that is part of the reason why.
Right.
Because of the miscommunication that was going on. Terrence McGee, you remember him, Buffalo Bills defensive back. He's going to be part of tonight's Draft Diamond special on MSG, and he's going to join us here on the John Murphy Show when we come back. And I promise you, I will ask him about his most famous play where he did not score on an unbelievable kick return against the New Orleans Saints. Terrence McGee with myself, Sal Capaccio, and Donald Jones when we come back on the John Murphy Show. Stay here.
Radio Network Sports Update.
It's that time of year. We're getting ready for football season. Also getting ready for hockey season. That's right around the corner. And the Sabres are having development camp down at Harbor Center. It's free, so go on down there. I was there yesterday. It's a good chance to see some of the young players that are going to be trying to make the roster here in 2017. Many of them obviously won't, but maybe down the road they're going to be superstars. You could say, I saw that guy. It's at Harbor Center, like I said. Development camp going on today. And then tomorrow they're going to have the French Connection 3-on-3 tournament. Major League Baseball All-Star break is upon us. The Home Run Derby is tonight. It's down in South Florida. The game, the derby, everything. Aaron Judge for the Yankees, Gary Sanchez for the Yankees. Can either of them dethrone Giancarlo Stanton, the defending champ who will be hitting in his home ballpark? That is tonight, the Major League Baseball Home Run Derby. Tomorrow is the All-Star game. And then Wimbledon also continuing today. And I should have done that. I didn't. Let me check again. How is Rafael Nadal doing? Has he won yet?
He had to go to a fifth set.
He's about to go to a fifth set. So he's won the last two after dropping the first two sets. He dropped the first two, 6-3, 6-4. Then he won 6-3, 6-4. But he's losing 5-4 in set number five right now. So there you go. That's your Wimbledon update with me, Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones, here filling in for John Murphy today on The John Murphy Show on WGR Sports Radio 550 and on MSG. We're going to welcome in right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh, a Buffalo Bill who I think is really very endearing to many Bills fans out there, especially a team that obviously hasn't made the playoffs in 17 years. There's just been some people, though, that some guys that have been on this roster over that time period that fans have latched onto. They love them. And anytime you can get a chance to talk to them, relive some of the moments they played, fans really like that. And I know I'm looking forward to it. Terrence McGee on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now. Terrence, hi. It's Sal Capaccio with your former teammate, Donald Jones, by the way. Thank you.
Hey, hello?
Yeah, Terrence, you're on the radio. Sal Capaccio here and Donald Jones, your former teammate. I think you know him.
Hey, yeah. What's up, Donald? Hey, how's everybody doing?
Yeah, man, what's up? How you been?
Yeah, I've been all right.
You back down in Texas now? What you been up to?
Yeah, I'm in Dallas, man. Really not too much, man. Just really chilling, spending more time with the kids.
Spending time with the kids.
That's good. That's good. Well, Terrence, we thank you for joining us today. One of the reasons we wanted to bring you on is because tonight on MSG at 9 p.m., we have a show called called Draft Diamonds, Top 10 Draft Diamonds, and it's pretty much guys who were drafted in the fourth round or later who became really good players and impactful players for the Buffalo Bills. That includes you. You were drafted in the fourth round of the 2003 NFL draft by the Bills, and then you really had a nice career here. You spent 10 years in Buffalo. What do you remember about your 10-year career here with the Buffalo Bills the most?
The most? Right now?
When you look back, what do you think about?
Probably all the injuries I had towards the end of my career at this point. But I guess when people, you know, talk to me and things like that, I really think about probably when I first got there, just really being nervous coming from a small school, not really expecting to. I made the practice squad. I probably wasn't happy. Just really not really expecting to make any kind of big impact, I guess. And then, you know, my rookie year actually getting to play and play a little nickel and getting into the system and things like that. And I know the next year we had brought Troy Vincent in. And I remember Troy Vincent got hurt like the second or third game of the year. And I remember him coming to me like, hey, man, you know, when I get back well, you know, I'm going to say that he, you know, he's pretty much going to stay, you know, stay there. And, and that's where, you know, I was able to, you know,
Now, Terrence, when I was here with you, you weren't doing much of the kickoff return stuff, but, you know, everyone talks about your kickoff return. And obviously, you played corner. You were a very good corner here, but they always talk about your kickoff return ability as well. I didn't get to see that because by the time I was here, you were already old. No, I'm just messing with you. But I didn't get to see that side of things. But the one thing that they do bring up is a certain play from – you know, your past in
2005 in New Orleans. Yeah, one of the best. That's right. And thank you, because of Hurricane Katrina, they played the game in San Antonio.
Okay.
Thank
right,
you.
Right.
Thank you for correcting that. You know it well, then, Terrence. All right. So this is one of the best kick returns I've ever seen, and yet you still did not only get in the end zone, but the team didn't score because it was at the end of the half. We're showing it back on the screen right now on the TV side of things here. When you look back at that, was there something you could have done, or are you still saying, oh, my God, I can't believe my own guy tripped me up?
No, I blame my teammates for not holding me up. That's what I tell everybody right now. But, no, I was tired. By the end of it, I honestly had good this time I jumped. So the guy, I forgot I had, like, a blocker in front of me, and he tried to cut the leg of my blocker. I was trying to get the timing of my jump right, and I was totally off. And I think, like, falling maybe 5 yards away from the end zone.
That's terrible.
I mean, you had all these, like, linemen and tight ends in front of you because you went zigzag so much it got them a chance to get out in front. They just don't know any better. I mean, they're linemen and they're tight ends.
Right.
You know, what are they going to do, Terrence? They're big, fat guys up there, and that's why. And, you know, it's tough to navigate through that, I bet you. Usually when you ran one back, you had clear sailing in front of you. It just wasn't the case on this one. You had too many big, fat, white jerseys in front of you.
I mean, that really wasn't it. I mean, if you really just watch the play, I don't know the runner I did. I probably ran 150 yards.
You did?
Yeah, you did.
So, you just by the end of the play, I was tired.
Terrence, is it worse to get tackled by the kicker or by your own dude?
It really don't matter. Both of them feel bad. Both of them feel bad. If you don't make it in the end zone, if you had a chance to get an end zone,
uh, Terrence McGee joining us here on the John Murphy Show. Terrence, I did a poll recently on who was the best Bills fourth-round draft pick ever. Of course, you're one of the guys that are under consideration, but unfortunately for you, there was a guy named Andre Reed who was also drafted in the fourth round. But, you know, so he obviously wound up running away with it. But you're a guy, obviously, coming into the NFL from a small school in the fourth round. I mean, how did you have a 10-year career? What was your secret to really not only making the team, but then, Terrence, there's another thing. You had a contract extension. You stayed in Buffalo. You played in this league for 10 years. What really went into being able to have that long career considering the circumstances of you entering the league?
I still don't know. To be honest, I mean, like I said, basically, like, I think second year, you know, points in Pro Bowl and not even at all, you know, second time like that. I'm not even too sure.
Wow.
But, you know, even when I got there, I know a lot of people were like, so impressed with my speed. And I was like, I've just never really been a blazing speed, you know, type of guy. So I don't know what happened by the time I got to the NFL.
Well, I'll tell you what, from Northwestern State to the NFL, a 10-year career, Terrence, you have been one of the bright spots over this 17-year playoff drought for the Buffalo Bills, and we look forward to having playoffs return here again. I know you never had a chance to play in a playoff game with the Bills, but you were one of the better bright spots. So thanks a lot for joining us here today. Congratulations on a great career, and we look forward to seeing you a part of Draft Diamonds tonight on MSG. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Terrence McGee right there. What do you remember about Terrence? Practice, locker room, stuff not in games that we remember.
Terrence was a very quiet dude. Mm-hmm. Didn't really say much. He always was joking around, but he was quiet with his jokes. It was kind of weird, you know. But he was like just a cool dude. You know, we would go up against each other every now and then in practice. And I remember when I got here, everybody was talking about him, like, man, that Terrence McGee, he's good. And I remember going against him in practice in my rookie year, and he was a savvy vet. He knew how to do different things. He knew how to grab you and hold you and do things like that. And he really helped me become, like, a better receiver in this league, you know. He was always a guy that was willing to help and teach you things.
Yep.
He always talked to me, especially in my first year, because he played special teams. He would always talk to me, especially during training camp, about, hey, man, special teams is going to be how you make the team. And you don't get that often, especially from from somebody on the other side of the ball, from the defensive side of the ball. They're always talking junk, especially in training camp, because most guys are trying to make the team, you know. So they're talking junk back and forth. But he was always a guy that would come up to you and just talk to you like, hey, man, this is what you got to do to make the team. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see some of these draft diamonds, the guys the Bills drafted in the later rounds.
I wanted to get a chance to ask him.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good.
Did I cut him off?
To ask him, from his years aside, I would think that Kyle Williams would be on this
as
well.
Yeah, right? Kyle Williams has to be in this draft.
A fifth-round pick, something like that?
Yeah,
fifth-rounder. Who Still else playing. He would think from his years would be on this list that was drafted here with him?
Well, I can go through some of the later draft picks we have, but like I said, I one of the things that struck me when I was doing my poll, who's the best first-rounder, who's the best second-rounder, and I went through each round. The sixth round is not really loaded with great players. Arthur Motes is the best sixth round pick the Bills probably ever had, to be quite honest. And that's not, it's no dig on Arthur to say this, but considering the career he's had, that doesn't speak well of all the greats of the sixth round that this team has had. And again, Arthur's made a nice career for himself. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about Hall of Famers here in the sixth round. It's tough to find late guys.
It is.
It's tough.
It is very tough to find guys. Once you get to the fifth, sixth, seventh, and undrafted, it is hard to find to find good, talented guys. Now, you'll find some hardworking guys and things like that that will go on to have very good careers, and some of them end up in the Hall of Fames and Wall of Fames and things like that. But, you know, for whatever reason, the Bills just haven't been able to get a good six-rounder out of this thing.
No, but it hasn't happened, but we'll see where it goes with the players they have now. They brought into camp this year, and, of course, changes on the horizon 2017
I would think a guy on the team right now, you talk about six-rounders, Kevon Seymour could change.
Yeah,
that.
I agree.
You know, he could be the one guy that's like, man, sixth round. Who have the Bills drafted in the sixth round that was good? Kevon Seymour's name would come up if he can continue to, you know, he showed a lot of promise last year. And this year, we'll see where he ends up. I would think that he's going to be in the slot. I would think that Tre'Davious will end up outside and Kevon will end up in the slot. But we'll see how that competition shapes itself out once we get to training camp.
Yeah, he was a sixth-round pick, obviously, last year. And, you know, just because what's funny is, you know, and look, Tre'Davious White is going to wind up being, you know, the number two guy and could eventually be the number one corner here, eventually down the road, you know, with Ron Darby. I think they could be a really good pairing. But when Tre'Davious White was drafted, I think people said, oh, right away he's going to start. I'm like, I've never seen this kid play. I could tell you one thing. Kevon Seymour is not just going to hand him his starting job.
No, he's not.
That's not going to happen. Kevon Seymour is a competitor, and he's not just going to say, hey, by the way, rookie, they drafted you. Go ahead and take over. Yeah, yeah.
Now, the thing is, Tre'Davious had a very good minicamp. You know, he caught some interceptions. He did a lot of things right. He sounds well when in his interviews. He knows how to talk to the media. I mean, he does. He's done everything the right way, and he's looked very good on the field. And he's looked like to this point that he is the number two cornerback. But everything changes once the pads come on when you get to training camp, and we haven't seen him in this league with the pads on. So we'll see how he is once we get to training camp and he starts leaning on guys. Guys start leaning on him, and he starts to have to come up and help out in the run game. How does he do that? You know, and we all know Coach McDermott wants his corners to help out in the run game, and Kevon will come up and help out in the run game. So, it's going to be a competition that we're all going to be watching during training camp, and especially once we get into those preseason games. But I think Tre'Davious White he's coming to play. Kevon's not going to hand it over, but Tre'Davious is coming to play. He is coming to earn that spot.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. And I'm glad that you brought that up because that is the third option on our poll. Our poll is, what was the most impactful or noteworthy personnel move the Bills made this offseason? Right now, trading for a 2018 draft pick, first-round pick, is running away with it at 48%. We'll get to that. And then in second place, Tyrod's new deal and bringing him back at 22. And then drafting of White and Jones at 20 and signing of Micah Hyde, 10%. So, let's talk about that third one and down the list and third on the voting tandem poll, right? The totem pole right now. Drafting of White and Jones. How much of an impact do we expect either of these rookies to make this year? As I just stated, I think Tre'Davious White will wind up starting as the number two. What I saw in training camp from this guy, what you just alluded to, boy, I'll tell you, really good footwork. I love how his feet are fast and seemed like he never misses a beat, even though they are going fast. But the other thing I really like about him, when I watched him in training camp, he gets his hands on a lot of footballs and he catches them. Like, this isn't a guy who you say, yep, that's why you play DB.
Yeah.
What's the old joke?
Yeah.
Right? That's why
they can't catch.
They can't catch. He can catch. And not only that, Donald, when it hit his hands, it's soft. Like, he catches like a wide receiver. Like, he has good, soft hands. And I think that's something this defense that McDermott wants to run, it's super important to him that he has guys that can take away the football and create turnovers. It's not just a guy that's going to knock a ball down. It's a guy that can actually catch the ball and go the other way with it.
You have to have guys that can catch the ball and go the other way. If you remember last year, I mean, Baltimore game. Ronald Darby catches his in. He had a pick six in his hands, went right through his hands. You know, I mean, it happened so many times last year where guys dropped interceptions. You have to be able to not just get your hands on it and knock it down. Just because you knock the ball down, guess what? They get to live for another play, run another play, and they can score on that play. But if you take the ball away, now your offense is on the field, and you can swing the momentum of any game. Takeaways, traditionally, when you look at it in the NFL, the teams that turn it over the most are the teams that are down at the bottom. The teams that take it away the most are the teams that are up at the top. You know, you have some anomalies in there, but for the most part, if you're taking the ball away, then you're going to win some games. And Tre'Davious is like a guy, like you said, he is not only getting his hands on some balls, but he is catching them. And I think he has the speed to take it the other way, all the way to the house, you know? So I think his feet work, for me, are the most impressive, though. And the reason being because we see a lot of corners when they come out of college. The college rules are a little bit different than the NFL. They come out of college and they want to grab. They want to hold a lot. But you have to have good feet work and the speed to be able to catch up with these guys because you're not allowed to grab and hold in the NFL like you could in college. And so because he has those good feet work, he's been blessed with that. He's not going to be relying on grabbing and holding with his hands as much. And I think it's a good thing for this defense because you won't get a whole bunch of holding or pass interference calls out of them.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. The other part of that equation, the second half, is Zay Jones. I really like what Zay Jones brings to the table. We talk about position flexibility. He is someone position flexible for this offense. He can play inside. He can play outside. He's going to line up to me as the slot receiver to begin camp. Here's the way I see it. You tell me if you see it differently, especially from someone who played the position and knowing how, you know, coaches like to structure these things.
Right.
To me, Donald, he goes to camp as the number three receiver in the slot, but he will have every chance to win the second job from Andre Holmes. I think Andre Holmes starts as the veteran outside Sammy Watkins, but by the end of camp, I don't know where that ends up.
Yeah, I think Andre Holmes is definitely, to come into camp, he's probably going to start on the outside, on the other side of Sammy Watkins. But there will be a competition between he, Zay Jones, and Philly Brown. I think they really like Philly Brown. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be the number two receiver, but you are going to see Philly Brown play a lot in this offense, I think, this year, along with special teams. I think Philly Brown is going to be on this team, and he's going to play a lot because I think they like the way he stepped up when he was down in Carolina the year they needed him to step up when Kelvin Benjamin and all those guys went down, and they end up still going to the Super Bowl. So I wouldn't sleep on a guy like Philly Brown, but I do think coming into camp, it's going to be Sammy Watkins, Andre Holmes, and then Zay is going to be a number three who's challenging for the number one spot. The fact that Zay can play inside and outside, though, it really puts him probably ahead of an Andre Holmes. And then the youth, really, you know, and being able to stay healthy. If Zay Jones can stay healthy and he can catch balls consistently, then, yeah, I think he can take that spot over.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. Zay did have a bit of an injury during, you know, workouts and things like that. As a rookie, you know, how tough is that to really go through that? And, you know, you're trying to impress and things like that. And on top of that, the mental state of it, getting over those things, doing the right things to prepare yourself. Just talk about, if you can, for me, the challenges of when you go through injuries as a young player, when you know that you're trying to make the roster, A, and, you know, B, you have to figure out, you know, what you do for your body, B.
Now, Zay is in a different position because he was a second-round draft pick. They traded up to get him in the second round. So, you know, he's going to be here, obviously, at least for a year or two, something like that. So he's not like an undrafted guy or a late-round draft pick that's really trying to make the roster. So he knew that coming into this thing. But it's still hard when you get hurt because you have – when you go high, you have a lot of pressure, you know, and – you look at the receiving core last year, I'm sure he's heard a lot of different things about the receivers core last year and how everyone had gotten hurt. And then he comes in and gets hurt early, and now everybody's like, oh, man, here we go. Another receiver going down. Is he going to be able to, you know? And so he has a lot of pressure on him just being an early-round draft pick. The fact that he was able to come back, though, and participate in mini camps, I think was huge for him, for his confidence in himself and his confidence in his knee and everything that he was going through, the fact that he was able to come back. I expect him to come into training camp and be ready to go. I think also, even though he's a young player, football runs in his blood, you know, and his dad played in the NFL, and I think his dad probably talked to him as well. Most guys don't have that. You don't have someone who, a dad or an uncle who played in the NFL that you can talk to when you get hurt, and they're like, listen, these things happen. Even though you're a young player, these types of things happen. You just got to come to work and rehab just as hard as you worked out to get here, you know. And I didn't have that. You know, I didn't have a father or uncle or anybody to talk to because I did get hurt in rookie minicamp. But I had to come back and just fight through a hamstring. Zay was able to do that. He was able to come back a couple weeks after his knee injury, participate in minicamps. He looked good in minicamps as well, you know. And so I expect him, once they get to training camp, I expect him to really challenge for that number two spot.
I agree 100%. Hey, I think he'll challenge for it. Can we read anything, Donald, into what they think about Zay long-term by not picking up Sammy Watkins' fifth-year option? Do you think we could read anything into that?
I don't think Zay Jones is a number one receiving type. I don't think he's that blazing fast. Mm-hmm. I look at a number one receiver as a guy who can – literally do anything. He can take the top off the defense, a true number one. Mm-hmm. Take the top off the defense, work underneath stuff, do anything you need him to do. Right, run every route. Zay is more of a possession type of receiver, you know, and so I think he'll always be a solid number two type of receiver in this league. He's going to score some touchdowns as long as he stays healthy, but I don't think he'll be a true number one. So I don't think you can read anything into not picking up Sammy's option. I think long term, if Sammy Watkins can come, if he can come and in camp and stay healthy through camp and then stay healthy through the entire season, they will do everything they have to make sure that Sammy Watkins is on this roster. I don't think they will let him go.
Totally agree. In fact, I'll say it this way. I'd be stunned. I'd really be stunned as I sit here if Sammy Watkins has a Sammy Watkins type of year they hope for. And short of having another injury or something like that, if he has a really good year, I'd be stunned if they just let him walk out the door.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
I don't think so.
I mean, I'd be surprised if he even left the team. I mean, they would franchise tag him.
Right.
But even if things got down and dirty and something happened, somehow they would find compensation in that. I believe that truly. Whether it's even a transition tag and to make things a little smoother, maybe it's a trade. I'm not even telling you I'm going down that road. I'm just saying for those of you, and the reason I bring this up is there's been a lot made about that, and there's a lot of people who think that in some way, shape, or form, he's angling to get his way out of here, or the Bills aren't interested in having him. I don't think that's the case at all. The only thing I think that's going on with Sammy Watkins is, hey, you haven't been healthy. We expect a lot from you. If you could prove you could stay healthy, right, we'll take care of you.
Right.
That's all. That's what this regime is about. I've used these words several times on the radio recently. I was told by someone in the organization a few months ago, Sal, just think about this is what Sean McDermott's about. And he gave me four words: reliability, accountability, durability, and availability.
Right.
And if Sammy Watkins can show those four things, which he has not shown one of them, availability necessarily, over the last couple of years, he'll be fine and they'll take care of him.
He'll be fine. I mean, that's all he has to show. Just show that. And to be honest with you, if he has a great season, I still think they'll end up franchising him. I don't think they're going to go with a long-term deal. They would want to see him be healthy for
maybe
more,
2 years in a row.
Right, 2 years in a row before they decide.
And you can work on a long-term deal as that happens.
Right, exactly. You know, so I would think that a franchise would be the move if Sammy comes in and has a great year, or even a good year, a solid year. You know, out of a number one, number ones, you're expected to go 1,000 yards, you know,
yeah,
over 1,000 yards, if not 1,000 yards. If he has a 1,000-yard season this year, then he plays all 16 games, even if it's 15 games. You have a guy that will probably be franchised.
Yep.
And they will try to work something out long term. I would be shocked, like you said, if they let Sammy Watkins walk out the door. And for people who think that because they didn't pick up his option that they don't have the leverage, no, this team still has the leverage on Sammy Watkins. They can do whatever they want to do with him if they want to.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. We got some calls we'll get to after this timeout, so let us get to that. We'll come back on the other side. We'll have a segment for your phone calls, and Donald and I will get to the very last choice in our poll, which is actually going to win the poll, it appears. It's the one I would vote for, the most impactful, important move, and noteworthy move the Bills made in the 2017 offseason, and that is picking up that 2018 draft choice from the Kansas City Chief in the first round. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the John Murphy Show on WGR and MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio filling in for Murph all week. Donald Jones by my side right now. Let's go out to Matt and Ole. And hey, Matt, you're on WGR and MSG on the John Murphy Show. What's up?
Hey, first of all, how are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
My only thing is I don't really think that Sammy Watkins wants to get out of town. I think that, first of all, I think he's been injured. I think it was smart for the Bills not to give him the fifth year option. This is a contract year, obviously, for him. Let's see how he does. Secondly, too, I just want to let you guys know, I think the biggest move the Bills can make in free agency is to sign Anquan Boldin today. And that's just my opinion. I think it would be even bigger than their first two first and second round draft picks. So
interesting. Well, I want to go back to your original point, though, Matt, when you said about, say, what about the injuries, though? I mean, I can't tie injuries to wanting to get out. Let's just say, even if he wanted to not be here, Sammy Watkins tried to be on the field last year. He fought through injuries. He actually played the year before that through injuries. And, in fact, last year played when he should not have played, I would say.
Well, I definitely agree. But I think that this year, I think the difference between last year and this year is the fact that we have a coach that actually has a system in place that is disciplined to get things done. If I told Rex that, you know what, Watkins broke his foot, but I still think he's okay to go out and play, I think Rex probably would have put him out on the field. That's just my.
That's pretty much what happened last year. That's exactly right. I guess what I'm asking you, though, is how is that? No, my question to you, though, is you said you think Sammy's aiming to get out of town. My question is, how does that relate to the injuries you brought up?
Aiming to get out of town. I said I don't think he's aiming.
Oh, I apologize. Thank you.
No, that's all right.
Thank you. All right, I got it. Now you make sense, Matt. Thank you very much.
Sal, do you read anything into when you hear – you hear sometimes Tyrod in his interviews will talk about Sammy and how he seems like he's focused this year. Do you read anything into that in him saying maybe he wasn't as focused in the previous years and worked as hard?
I don't
in the
know.
Previous
it's years? It's hard for me to ever get there. I think that we can always kind of read into and parse things and really kind of get too much into the detail that mm-hmm. isn't there. But, yeah, I mean, it is interesting to me. He mentioned some things, right? It is interesting. But, look, I mean, I and I've said this many times. All players go through a period, I think, of their career. It's rare that a player wouldn't go through a period of his career early on where he has to learn about his own body, where he has to learn about what he really does have to do to get out there. And in Sammy Watkins' case, this is a kid who, down in South Fort Myers High School, as a 10th grader, was dominating football fields.
Yeah.
He was always the best player, Donald, always on the field. The minute he stepped onto the field at Clemson, he was the best player on the field on most days, right? So when he gets to the NFL, it's not like that anymore, and he has to learn how to treat his own body because guess what? Everybody's kind of like Sammy, maybe not as talented, but they're all the elite athletes of the world, and I don't think it's an indictment on any athlete to not understand that and to say at some point, man, I'm not doing what it takes to be more focused and take care of my body because they haven't been through that in their life.
I can understand that. Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you look at just me coming up, I was always better than – than everybody else. And then once I got here, there were certain things I did have to do.
Right.
You know, and now obviously because I was undrafted, I was always focused, focused. And sometimes first round picks, not saying that he wasn't focused or working
and
as
and some
hard.
Guys have different maturity levels than others.
Right,
some have
exactly.
different people around them telling them that they listen to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how that's going to go. When Tyrod makes a statement about, you know, yeah, he's eating right, he's doing that. Sure, I could read into it. Well, maybe he wasn't before. But what I don't think is he's calling him saying, you weren't doing that.
Right.
What I think he's saying is he's learning about his body and how to really take it to the next step for him because he hadn't learned that before.
Yeah.
I think Reggie Ragland's in the same boat. Look, I think Reggie Ragland, for everybody to think he's just going to come back on the field like and play like he did at Alabama right away, no way. I mean, there's a lot that goes into a rehab of a year of an ACL when you're a guy that just dominated throughout your life. And I think Reggie Ragland, there's going to be a learning curve for him mentally, physically, physiologically, everything for him to get back to where he needs to be. And it might take a year. He's going to work his butt off to do it. But I don't. He's never been through that.
No.
How is he supposed to do it perfectly?
Right.
There's no way.
He's never done it. And how many guys do you see come back? I mean, there's a select few like Adrian Peterson and Wes will come back and be dominant a year off of ACL. It just doesn't happen. Most guys, it takes you 2 years.
He may be good, but he's not going to be the same player
he
necessarily would have been.
Right, exactly. You know, and so those guys actually played in the league before, though.
That's right.
Reggie hasn't done anything yet. He hasn't played at this level yet. He's been in practice, but he hasn't played in games and gone through waking up on a Monday after a game like, oh, my body hurts. My knee is killing me right now. He hasn't gone through that. So he has to still go through that stuff. He has to go through a full training camp into a season, preseason games and all. We didn't get to see that from him last year. So, you know, he has that mental side of things. That
plus, he's got to think about his knee.
That's what I'm saying.
Like he actually has that in his head.
And then he still has that knee that's going to have scar tissue and everything down in there. And it's like, oh, my knee is hurting me. You know, but is it scar tissue? Am I feeling something? Is something wrong with my knee again? I mean, it's he has a lot that he has to overcome right now in dealing with this knee injury. And I know people are like, man, if we can get Reggie back at 100%, he makes a huge difference. A difference on our defense. I get that. But guess what? I wouldn't be shocked if he wasn't 100%. Like, I don't expect him to be 100% when he gets into training camp and once he gets into the season. I don't expect that out of him because it's a serious injury that he had.
This league has been littered with players who have had a boatload, a world of talent, who just didn't take care of their body correctly.
Yeah.
And they're not playing. Mike Williams, who was the Bills' first-round pick in, what, 04, whatever, 05, the offensive tackle I'm talking about.
Oh, not I was about 04, to say, Mike Williams.
No, it was 02, whatever it was. Mike, that one, the offensive tackle, not the receiver.
Too many Mike
By the
Williams
way, the receiver actually I could put in this boat, too, because he had his own issues. But that guy was, everyone said, franchise left tackle, totally the right fit. He's going to Buffalo. He's a third or fourth overall pick. He ate his way out of the league, Donald. I mean, he didn't know, and he did it wrong, and he never corrected.
You just don't know. And you come out of college, and you come out of school, you're not making any money. Now you get to the pros, and you're a first-round top 10 pick, and you got some millions in your bank account. Yeah, you're just like, man, I made it.
That's right.
And that's why that people always talk about later-round draft picks know what it takes because you work just to make the team.
Right.
You know, and every day you have that fear of being cut. But if you're a first-round or a second-round guy, you know you're going to be there a couple of years. They're going to give you a chance after another chance after another chance, unless you're up in New England. They'll cut you after 1 year.
I guess so.
Most
guess
teams
so.
Are going to keep on giving you a chance, though.
All right, let's go out to Jonathan in Alden. Hi, Jonathan. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, Sal. Hey, Donald. I pretty much agree with the majority of the vote. I think the biggest move is the trading for the Kansas City picks, because it does seem like the Bills are looking for a quarterback. That's why I think the second biggest move is drafting Nathan Peterman, because it does sound like they don't have much faith in Tyrod Taylor. So I'm looking forward to see what we have in Peterman and Cardale Jones, how the quarterback situation pans out.
All right, thank you very much. I don't think Nathan Peterman's going to challenge Tyrod Taylor for the starting job. I mean, I think he's going to be challenging T.J. Yates for the backup role. And from what I saw from Nathan Peterman in OTAs and minicamp, I think that he is what we thought he was coming out of college, which is a guy who is very smart, very comfortable in the pocket, knows the offense, knows the system. He's ready to play in this league. He doesn't quite have that mustard or zip to make every throw in the league, though.
Right. And that's – I mean, you look, accuracy is one thing, and you can get by with accuracy. But here in Orchard Park, in that wind and that snow and the weather that we get here, you got to be able to zip the ball. Tight spirals, everything, you know. And so – that is yet to be seen out of him. And like you said, we've seen in OTAs what we thought he was. I don't see him challenging for any starting role this year or the next of years. And then in terms of even challenging T.J. Yates, I would think that T.J. Yates would be here unless he just totally is horrible in training camp, because you need to have a veteran behind Tyrod Taylor.
And think about the way Sean McDermott, you would think, wants to, from what we know of Sean McDermott, we've both had enough interaction with him. He's going to want a guy in the room, the likes of a guy who's played in a playoff game.
Right.
Right? That probably appeals to him.
I'm sure it does. It would appeal to any coach.
Right.
You know, like, I need a guy who not only played in the system, but he's played in a playoff game and has won some games in this league.
Yeah.
You know, because if Tyrod Taylor was to go down and you don't have him here, now you have to rely on Nathan Peterman or Cardale Jones, then what do you have? Mm-hmm. So I would think that T.J. Yates will be on this roster.
I agree. I also voted, as the caller did, for the last choice on our poll. I think that the most important, noteworthy, impactful, whatever move the Bills made in the 2017 offseason was really grabbing that Kansas City first-round pick next year. And look, I've heard correctly, by the way, many of you say, but it's Kansas City. They're usually good. It's not going to be a high pick. I don't know that. They've had a tumultuous offseason. They fired their general manager. They let go of Jeremy Maclin. They drafted a first-round quarterback who a lot of people think they might give him some time this year. I don't know. I don't see that necessarily happening unless Alex Smith really takes a dip of some sort. But the other thing is, and we're going to hopefully have Evan Silva on later in the week. Evan Silva had a great tweet about this the other day. He said that they have one of the toughest schedules in the league, Kansas City. So I'm really looking forward to maybe that pick being better than what we'd hope for. And even if they win, let's say, 7 games, which would be a down year for Kansas City, that's generally a top 15 pick, Donald.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's impactful is if you combine that with whatever, wherever the Bills pick, whether they're bad and they pick high, they're good and they pick low, if you combine that with another middle-type pick, you can really maneuver around the board next year. And if you really want to search for that franchise quarterback because you're not convinced in Tyrod, next year's class is the class to do it, and you could find him. But otherwise, if you like Tyrod, you got 2 first-round picks to play with to really add to your roster.
See, I think for long-term future, adding that pick was huge for this franchise. I think for this year and possibly future, re-signing Tyrod Taylor was huge for this franchise. You know, so I would go with either one of those two as the top 2 picks in our
Let's pick. Remember, though, you know what they did with that pick, though? They did move down, and they still got Tre'Davious White at 27.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. They were picking 10th. They moved 17 spots down, and they get a guy like Tre'Davious White. And from what we saw from Tre'Davious White, I can just envision us going, wow, they got that guy at 27. Think of the 26 players
draft
that
steal.
Went before him.
Would that
right?
be a draft steal? Is that considered a steal?
I don't know. First-round pick has a steal, right? I don't think so.
Man.
But that would be amazing. There's the trade. We just put it up on the board. But
yeah.
Kansas City was really in love enough with Patrick Mahomes to go up 17 spots, give the Bills not only that first-rounder next year, but here's how you can make it into this year. They actually got that 3rd pick this year, which also was – then traded by the Bills in those deals they got for Deion Dawkins and Zay Jones, and they moved around the board. So I could turn it into 2017, Donald, if I said that 3rd-round pick helped them also get Deion Dawkins and Zay Jones.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to talk to Tre'Davious about this, but I think I want to call him Trey Day. That's going to be his nickname. I'm going to talk to him and see if he likes it. If he likes it, you know, I might have to trademark it.
Did you ever have a nickname?
No. My nickname was DJ.
Just DJ.
Yeah, just DJ.
That's pretty boring, dude.
I mean, you know, it kind of goes with the initials of my name. You know, it's James. Simple.
Jeff in Jamestown. Keep it simple. Jeff, you're on with DJ and Sal.
Yeah, you just mentioned it. I think the most impactful move is Tre'Varius White, Zay Jones, and Deion Dawkins, because you got at least two starters there and possibly three in Jones, and that's immediate. You know, you're talking about the 2018 pick. We all know the draft is a crapshoot, so who knows? I mean, these are players on the team right now, and we know at least two of them are going to be starters. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, well,
do we know two of them are going to be starters? I don't think we know that.
I don't think we know. I think we've seen things in OTAs and mini camps that you would say, man, he looks like he's going to be a starter.
Right.
But we don't know yet. But I would say, if you can, your first three draft picks are come in and be starters in year one, you had a good draft. You can pick up another first round pick for the next year. You had a good draft.
No, I agree with that. And look, Tre'White's gonna start, right? I mean,
even if it's nickel, yeah.
Even if it's slot, he's gonna start. So I think you're almost guaranteed to have one. I don't know if Zay Jones will, but I will say this: all three of those guys are gonna play. All gonna play.
Yeah.
Zay's gonna get a lot of time on the field. Deion Dawkins may be your fifth lineman. He may be your backup right and left tackle swingman. I don't know. At some point in a football season, people get hurt. He's gonna play.
I think Deion is going to. All Deion has to do is come in and have a good camp. If he comes in, and I'm not saying a great camp, I think if he has a good camp, he's going to be starting. We had
over Jordan Mills?
Yes.
Jordan had a good camp. I like Jordan had a good OTA mini camp. I think it's going to take a little bit more than that to beat him out.
I think, you know, because we had his offensive line coach in on the show with us, and he said to us, this dude is ready to start. You know, so if he comes in and I think they really, really like him. And the fact that they they had him at the left tackle position when Cordy Glenn was not in, they had him at the left tackle position as a rookie playing starting left tackle, you know. And so I think that they're not going to – he's really – if he has a good training camp and a couple of good preseason games, he's going to be a starter at the right tackle position, and they are going to be willing to – just go through their bumps and bruises with him, their growing pains with him as he gets into the season. Because it's not easy to be a tackle in this league. The defensive ends are very talented. They're fast. They're everything. He's going to have to get used to that. And I think if he has a good training camp, they'll be willing to deal with those growing pains.
All right, when we come back, very quick, real news, fake news, and what have we learned here on the John Murphy Show on WGR and MSG.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm. Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. And what we did learn was from Andrew Brandt. What's going on with the new CBA? When that finally happens in 4 years, there's some rumblings from NFL players about how much money they're making compared to NBA. Their NBA counterparts. So, Andrew, we asked him about a lot of those issues.
What really needs to happen is the collective money needs to be spent. Forget about how, you know, whatever the cap ends up being, if it's 47%, 48%, that's an issue. But maybe even a bigger issue is, are they spending it? You know, you got teams throwing over $40 million of cap room into the next year to, again, be thrown over the next year because they're not using it.
Right.
So that's, to me, a problem that gets way under the radar by people that forget whatever the cap is, 150, 160, 170. Are they spending 170? A lot of teams are not.
That was Andrew Brandt, who joined us here on the John Murphy Show a little bit earlier. We thank him. We thank Terrence McGee as well. Now it's time, Donald, for Real News Fake News, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. And in Real News Fake News, it is said, and I have to get exactly who said this again, but basically one of the former, was it Dan Hampton? One of the former Chicago Bears from the 85 Bears who wound up winning a Super Bowl said that the team would have won four Super Bowls, four, if Jay Cutler had been their quarterback instead of Jim McMahon. Real news or fake news?
Oh, I'm going to go fake news. I really don't have any respect for Jay Cutler as a player. I just don't think he even cared. Most of the time, he was just there so he wouldn't get fined. So I'm going to go fake.
It was Dan Hampton. I'm going to say fake as well, but I'm going to go for the other reason. Yeah, the 85 Bears were really good. They won, and they were dominant.
Right. I don't
think
he adds value.
They weren't, like, the other 3 years around them, they were good. They were okay. They would not have been a team for 4 years that would have made that run. I mean, that's hard to do. We saw it happen one time with the Bills ever, four straight. You know, some teams have gone 3 out of 4. To say to go to 4 straight, Jay Cutler is not Jim Kelly, first of all. And that Bears team would not have lasted like that 4 years in a row, playing like that at that level on that defense. They were good. They were not a championship team like for 4 years in a row like that.
Jay Cutler, to me, just doesn't add any value to a team. Like, he's not a quarterback. Coming in, it's like, oh, man, we just got our franchise quarterback. And I know, you know, we were in awe from his arm strength and his ability and all of that stuff. But from franchise quarterbacks are more than just ability. You know, they have you got to do a lot more, and he just doesn't have that. So, nope.
I mean, I guess if he says, like, because they won 10 games, 15, 14, 11, and 12, those are good teams. They also lost in the divisional round of the playoffs twice in those years. That takes a lot to get to 4 Super Bowls. All right, Donald, great job today. Thank you very much, and we're going to be here all week together. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's do it.
All right, Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio. We are going to step aside because we have Shopin the Bulldog on the way on WGR Sports Radio 550, but we invite you as well to go over to BuffaloBills.com. Have you missed any of this program? Of course, with Andrew Brandt and Terrence McGee, who joined us on the program a little bit earlier. We got a lot more coming your way this week. We're working on lots of different guests coming your way, talk about a lot of different things. They're telling me I got another minute, so we can just keep
rapping. Listen, though, I
go
got
ahead.
Something for
yes.
you. Real news or fake news? This is not in our rundown. Bleacher Report did a tweet, and it's about dodgeball.
Oh,
and
okay.
In there, they quoted a dodgeball player who said he would love to see dodgeball in the Olympics. So real news, fake news, dodgeball in the Olympics in the next 10
No, I don't want dodgeball.
Years.
I do not want dodgeball in the Olympics. I don't want it. Heck, I'm trying to get rid of synchronized swimming.
Dodgeball was fun, though, man. What? That was one of
question.
The best sports.
Let me ask you a question. Or NBA Summer League, are you into it?
Yeah.
You like it?
I like it. I like watching
these guys. There's some good guys to watch out there.
Oh,
I'm a Lakers fan. I like Lonzo Ball.
Are you a Lakers fan?
I am.
How do you
that? We can fight about that tomorrow.
What is going on, man?
We're
going
to fight right now. Bye.